Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Debate Night with Brody and Hunter. Super excited for this episode. Super excited.
This is going to be a good one.
Back in the studio yet again. Real quick reminder, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, don't forget to leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. If you're listening here on YouTube, whether it's live or if you're watching it post, leave a comment. Let us know you're here, where you're listening from, and feel free to put your opinions in on all of these takes. And we might just mention you on a future Debate Night as things kind of progress on. But you know, as you might see in the title, we've got some very interesting things coming down the pipeline. We're gonna go over some of Brody's worst takes according to his Twitter. So what y'all are saying was his worst takes.
I wanted to fire the people up to really try to get some good calls tonight. That's what we're hoping for. Some
and
solid
then,
calls.
We're also gonna be going over Music City Open, explaining kind of what's going on from what we've been hearing, people on the ground. Mm-hmm. We're obviously not there, so we can't say we saw it with our own eyes, but we'll walk through some of that, and then we're going to have a lot of calls coming in tonight. That is the plan, try to fire through these first few things. But I think first we got a giveaway.
Yeah, well, so if you're watching right now on YouTube, or if you're listening, make sure you guys go over and subscribe to the Foundation Podcast. We're going to be giving away this Photon Zone once we hit 15,000 subscribers. So if you haven't subscribed, make sure you click that subscribe button. And we have a Dark Horse Undertaker to give away over on the Apple Podcast review. So if you did drop a review for us, we do appreciate it. We read all of them. And I have one right here, and this is actually the winner. It goes, perfect for those long drives and commutes. Loving the topics. Appreciate all the pro scene takes and behind the scenes info. Keeping it up. Keep it up, guys. Looking forward to the next episode. Stay freaky. That goes out to Gigi. #2487 on Discord.
Nice.
Yeah. So congrats.
Really quick for both our audio and our live listeners, we are currently working on fixing that buzzing sound that you hear.
Is there a bee?
There's a slight buzzing.
Is there a bee?
There's a slight bee. There's a bee in the room. It's something going from our board to our computer. So it is.
We have something.
It is in the process of being fixed.
And we have something set up tonight that hopefully will work better with the live calls. So that's what we're hoping for.
That's what we're hoping for. That also could possibly be what's causing the noise. So,
we have no idea.
You know what? We're a new show. This is our eighth episode.
Yeah.
We're working through some technical stuff.
We're still trying to figure it out.
Things are being fixed. So some people are saying it's only buzz when it's being maxed out. But don't worry, we're going to be fixing that as the show goes on.
Could
so
it be my
we're
fan?
Roll on. No, it's not you.
Is my
ignore
don't
that? Okay. Nothing's coming out of
All
Brody's
right.
computer. We're
All
just.
Right.
Don't even pay attention to that.
There's nothing on this computer. All right. So last podcast, we always kind of jump in and talk about some of the things that we might be wrong on or potentially some things that people kind of tune in afterwards. And again, hopefully these people call in. I think it's always better to have, if you can have a conversation with someone in person, I always think that's better than especially Twitter. I feel like Twitter is literally the worst place to try to change someone's opinion. I think people just love...
But it's a fun place to
It's a fun place, but I don't think it's the most effective. So a lot of people are giving me gruff today, being like, why don't you just like say it on Twitter right now? Why don't you? And it's like, I don't really want to write an essay.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather just be able to talk. That's why we have this podcast. It's so much easier. So some people are coming at us a little bit on that. But one thing that I will say, I'll change my mind. I was wrong. So we were talking a lot about like the pros, how, you know, at the end of their rounds, they would like stick around and like jump on lead card. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think some people are doing that specifically to get on coverage. Yes. Or to have, you know, a little moment in the, what do you call it? Moment in the shine. That's shining moment. What?
Moment in the spotlight.
There you go. But this person left a reply or left a comment on YouTube, and I actually agree. He said, quick point about the pros hanging out at holes or walking with the top card or two after they finish their rounds. They have nowhere else to go. A typical disc golf course does not have a clubhouse for guys to kick back, eat a snack, and watch the end of the tournament on TV. They are hanging out in the course waiting for their friends to finish so they can get some tacos. Now, I don't know about the tacos part. That
I will say
I might disagree with the tacos.
What he's describing, I'm sure, is true.
Yes,
of,
there's a lot certain, of people.
Yeah, and I think we talked about that some. Is there some players who like legitimately just want to go out and support their ride or die? Cameras, no cameras.
It might be someone that they're like touring with.
Yeah, but I think the biggest issue is you can go support them and be there for them while being behind the ropes or while being behind the scenes.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have to be. I think the biggest thing is like people will try to like move and get in camera line shots and stuff like that. It's kind of more to your, what we were talking about before.
Yep.
You can be there, support, enjoy the tournament without trying to like make the moment about you, if that makes sense. Because I mean, heck, this past week in the Battle for Bedford, which I think we're gonna talk about that here in a second.
Mm-hmm.
I was out as the tournament director. I got to enjoy the final round.
Yep.
But there was a decent sized gallery, maybe 70 to 100 people were out there watching the final round, which for a B tier, pretty
a lot
proud
of people.
Of that.
Yeah.
So they were out watching. I, as the tournament director, very easily could have been up in the front. But I know there were some kids that this is the only time they'll ever get to see Paul play or some of the other guys play. And so I just hung out in the back. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I got to enjoy the disc golf all the same. I got to, I just kind of moved myself around where I watched the disc golf, but there was no need for me to be up front. I wasn't doing media coverage. I wasn't doing anything. I was just there as a spectator.
Yeah.
So there was no point for me to use my role as a TD or if I was a player to get up in front of everyone other than if I wanted everyone to be like, oh, that's Hunter. Oh, that's a TD.
I think that problem can be easily solved with just, you know, a Jeff Spring email, hey players, or, you know, it's just setting precedent. It's setting an example of this is what we're going to do from here on out. So we'll see. But I thought that was a good point. I didn't really think about that as much. And yeah, I was wrong on some of those people.
Yes.
Okay. The Joe Mez thing. I don't know if I ever, maybe I did say this at one point by accident, but I have never said that post-production should go away.
Correct.
I'm a huge fan of post-production.
I have probably said that.
Okay. I'm a huge...
But that was not your take.
I'm a huge fan of post-production, but I think it should live under the Disc Golf Pro Tour umbrella so that it builds the Pro Tour and the Pro Tour continues to get bigger and bigger, bigger payouts and all that stuff. And also, I think the post-production should be pushed further back so it's not so close.
Yeah, I think that where it gets confusing in the line is like we talk about live disc golf being the way to consume all of this stuff, the benefits of live. And when talking about that, it very easily sounds like we're 100% talking against the other solution, which is post-produce, when there is a world where both live and both coexist with live being the main way you watch and post-produce being the way that people who, like all the reasons they say, working on the... Great example. I was running the tournament this weekend. I didn't have time to watch match play.
Yep.
I watched the scores of match play, but I didn't get to consume a single minute of live match play because I was too busy this weekend.
Yep.
Post-produce exists for things like that. Sure, under the Disc Golf Network, under the Disc Golf Pro Tour umbrella, and with live being the feature pushed way.
Is
kind of what you were talking about.
No, exactly. And, you know, I think Jomez, I think their best stuff, because I'll just say, I don't think filming disc golf takes that much skill.
The actual filming part.
The actual filming. Yes. Getting a camera guy. Now, the production, all that stuff, that's a whole different ballgame.
The graphics, and then, the editing,
yeah,
all
that's
that.
A whole different ballgame. And then when you're talking about trying to do it live, that's a whole nother ballgame.
Yes.
It's unreal. It's just the buzz now. I'm gonna keep going.
I think with just the buzz, we're fine to
sounds
move
like cross-wiring.
Forward.
I don't even know what that means.
It definitely, I think it is. I think it's cross-wiring. There's also...
Okay,
I think that's just what's going on.
I'm gonna talk this out. Okay, so this comment said exactly. They're agreeing with the Jomez kind of thing. They're saying I don't understand how they don't understand. Well, that's confusing. That spending 4 or 5 hours, 3 or 4 days a week watching disc golf isn't feasible for basically anyone. In the time I watched one live round, I could have watched the whole round post-produced and played around myself, or went to the gym and cooked dinner or had family time, yada, yada, yada. There's a place for both, and obviously watching the final round of Worlds is live is going to be more exciting, but isn't feasible for most point. And then I think also someone even said, like, no disc golfer has time to watch live disc golf. So this is what I'll say about that. If you're a football fan out there, especially if you're like in the younger years, right, where you don't have, maybe you're not married yet, maybe you don't have a family, you're watching football 4 hours Monday night. Then you don't really have anything Tuesday or Wednesday. You're watching 4 hours of football Thursday night. You're probably catching a Friday night college football game. Then you're sitting watching football probably all day.
You're watching like 24 hours on the weekend.
You're probably watching college football all day Saturday, and you're watching all day Sunday NFL. So the fact that I just completely disagree with this person. There, I know tons of people that watch golf all for for 8 to 12 hours on the weekends. There are people that love watching live disc golf, and there's going to be some people that don't. There's benefits to both, but saying that there's no benefit to live disc golf, because even someone said, like,
it just, I my, like watching. My whole argument for live disc golf,
you get to see the whole picture. You get to see what's.
No.
Oh, okay. Well,
my whole argument is one shot, the shot, James Conrad. Imagine just if you watch that post produce, you missed out. And that's what you're missing. That's what you're risking missing out if you're not watching live or consuming stuff live. The Twitter world blew up. The disc golf social media blew up that day to where it was spoiled for most people who were trying to watch it post-produced.
Yeah.
And that moment was just like everyone who is a disc golf fan rejoiced in that moment of James Conrad throwing in that shot to win Worlds. Mm-hmm. Well, I know it put him in a playoff, but that was the shot that won him Worlds, basically. And without live, you don't get to all watch that at the same time.
No.
Then the disc golf world never has that big reaction that gets us attention to SportsCenter or something like that.
Yeah.
Because me and you might watch it on Monday when it comes out, and then Trevor watches it on a Tuesday. We text Silas about it on a Wednesday. Connor watches it next Friday. And the disc golf world never has one moment of, holy frick, that just happened.
Well, that's my whole,
anytime someone brings up live, I'm like.
Well, let's talk about an event that not that many people did watch live. Because I think that is, I mean, I think people will prioritize certain events to watch live, and people will not. They'll just say
that's
like,
also very true.
This one I don't really care about, and
that's how I consume other sports.
Yeah, like I'm gonna watch if I can. Like if I'm not in a tournament or something, I'm gonna watch every single Florida Gators game, every single time, unless I'm doing something.
Yeah.
Now Alabama, for example, like they're really fun to watch, and I would love to watch them, but I'm not prioritizing my day around the Alabama.
I'll prioritize that game if they're playing, like the Alabama Auburn is always something.
Yeah.
Like there's certain games,
but if they're playing someone out of conference and that they're gonna beat by 60, if I'm not doing anything and I turn on the TV, sure I'll watch it. But I'm not making it a point like their kickoff's at 12. I'm sitting down watching it. So, with that being said, the match play, it might have been a flop. From what I've seen on Twitter, the amount of people that did not pay attention, because it's two things.
I think
one,
it was a flop.
A bunch of people didn't watch. I tuned in at one point like mid. I think it was second round or something because I was tuning in and when I could, only 5,000 people were watching on YouTube live on Sunday. And I feel like they were getting normally like 12, 13, 15,000 on YouTube. So that was way down. And then the people that did watch it, lots of negative stuff.
Well, I think the biggest
of
issue
why they didn't like
it. And it's a
it.
Shame because match play can be a great event like this. Like, what's it called? Like an extra event. It starts with an E.
Exhibition.
Exhibition.
Really
it's gonna be a great exhibition.
You're lucky
event.
I pronounced that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think it's a shame that like this put a bad taste in some people's mouth for match play within disc golf. But I think to me, one of the biggest reasons I wasn't interested was the course.
Course. Yep.
I also heard this. You know, this wasn't why people weren't originally tuning in, but I think a lot of people turned it off because I heard there was coverage. Again, I didn't get to watch it, but I heard a lot of complaints about coverage issues.
There's a
commentary.
There's a really weird rebounding situation. I don't know if it's when you go in from your Apple, if you have an Apple iPhone, and I'd be interested if people also get this because when I go in and I click the app and I watch it in the network, the app itself, even on YouTube though, it happens where like if I go somewhere else and then I come back. I get in like an endless loop.
Well, that just sometimes happens in the stream, I think. when it's a mistake.
But I don't know if other people are getting it, if they're watching it on desktop or maybe they're watching it on Android, but it happens all the time where I'm like in an endless 30-second loop of where I'm just seeing James Conrad throw his upshot, and then after he throws it, it just goes back and they're talking about James, and it's like, it's like a Groundhog's Day situation. And so I know for me, that's really, really frustrating trying to watch live sports. Yeah. But yeah, the course, was the number one reason.
If this was a different year and we haven't seen four or five, whatever it is, golf courses played between the National Tour and the Pro Tour already,
mm-hmm.
then sure, it might have been more exciting. But this year is not the year to go to a golf course.
If
right
you
now.
Play on a golf course, it has to be a golf course like where OTB was,
yes.
or where was the other one?
Goat Hill?
No, no, no.
I don't
no.
think that was very
no, 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 no. OTB was a good one, and then the it was supposed to be Portland, but
Open.
was it Portland Open? Yeah, where they have really good trees off the fairway that you can kind of carve out good holes.
Mm-hmm.
The notion of people wanting to see players throw down
the
fairway,
yeah.
I think a couple tournaments a year, it's exciting to watch, like Eagle Park, that 700-foot par four. Like that's
exciting.
That
was exciting. Yeah.
But I think when you're watching it like for hours,
it gets boring.
You've seen it, and so
well, the other thing
I don't
want to
get into commentary either. I'm seeing a lot of people also talking about the commentary. That is something that I think the Disc Golf Network is going to have to address in the off season.
Yeah.
Because there's a situation there, and they're gonna have to try to figure it out.
Because for me, it doesn't even. When I hear we're gonna play on a golf course, I'm already uninterested before I get to see if it's a good golf course. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
When I like, that's not true at the beginning of the year, but like we started off with Las Vegas Challenge. We had DDO. They played on Emporia Country Club, Portland Open, OTB Open, Goat Hill. I mean, that's five right there. And I know Worlds had a golf course.
Yeah.
That's
there's
like
a lot
six
of golf
or
courses.
Seven. That's, yeah. This was at least the seventh, possibly higher golf course mm-hmm. that was live streamed as like a big tournament this year. So when I hear golf course, I'm at the point that like I'm not even giving it enough of a chance to see if it's a well-designed golf course on like mix of woods and stuff.
Yep.
Because I'm just going, oh my gosh, another golf course, before I even get to turn it on.
Yeah.
I think that's how a lot of people.
No, people weren't excited.
Yeah, because some people might have just been like, I don't want to watch another golf course.
Yeah.
Especially match play disc golfers, I can speak as one, don't really understand match play yet, because we've never. If you weren't a golf fan first, transition
well,
to disc golf fan.
To be fair, watching the first, I think I watched the first hour, and there was a lot of terminology that was being thrown around during it. To where if you came from a golf background and you've watched the Ryder Cup's around the corner. It's happening 2 days from now, and that's the biggest match play event of golf. Like that's
yeah.
huge. And so if you come from that background and you tune in, it was very difficult to watch and hear the commentary.
Were they using terms wrong?
Yes.
Okay.
They're using terms for skins. They're using terms that I've never heard of.
See, that was a thing.
And so for other people, like for you, you probably wouldn't even notice or care. But if you do have that background of like this is what things are always said, you know, and then all of a sudden starts someone saying something different. It's tough. It's
yeah.
tough to make.
Well,
that
was the thing for me is I thought match play and skins were essentially the same thing.
I think they did too.
I think a lot of disc golfers do. Because like the first time I played match play against Trevor, I was pushing holes in my head. And so we won one. I was like, all right, I'm up 4-1.
Yeah.
And Trevor goes, no, we're all square, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it should have been like 1-1, but like all square.
Yeah.
Cause you're either up one, up two, whatever.
It was confusing.
Or two up.
I don't even
understand it still.
The UDisc 2 was also very confusing. Looking at there was also very, very confusing. Oh, we just got a $20 dono. From Gary, he says post-produce should be a feature of a subscription package. If you pay $4.99 per month, you get live. If you pay $7.99 or $9.99, you get live and top-tier post coverage of cards with exciting lineups or people chasing leads. What do you think about that? Throwing it all into the paywall.
I don't like everything
behind a paywall.
If there is a paywall, what I would do is, I mean, realistically, if they wanted the most people behind the paywall, I think this would make people outraged. If the paywall is the way they're going, you should give the first few rounds free and the final day you got to pay for.
Mm.
But regardless, I don't like the paywall where we're at now.
I
also think if you have a paywall, I don't want to be seeing commercials every 10 seconds.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, I'm paying.
I'm so confused by that.
Maybe make the live stream free with commercials and $5 to remove the commercials.
Yeah, because
like,
when
why
you,
am I paying?
When you watch a pay-per-view event, like a boxing match or
yeah, there might
UFC
be an ad read
stuff
from the commentators while something's going on.
I don't even
on.
Know if there is that.
Or
I
feel, like Showtime Boxing if they're doing it. It's like a thanks to Showtime
Boxing. Oh, maybe
boxing
like maybe like a quick one. But I'm trying to think. Like when I pay for a pay-per-view event, I don't think I see commercials.
No.
So I don't know. I don't know.
Same thing with Disney Plus, Netflix. Like you're paying for a subscription service.
Like I have Spotify.
I wouldn't look at it as a pay-per-view event because USDGC is a pay-per-view event.
Will they have ads?
Probably not. But we're looking at, we got to look at it as a subscription service, right? So like a good question would be is if you watch a game on ESPN Plus, I don't have ESPN Plus. Are there commercials on that game?
They do have ads.
Okay, so then that's so I'm
ESPN wrong. Plus, like when you're watching a UFC fight that's on ESPN Plus, that's not a pay-per-view. Like it's a fight night, there are ads.
But you paid, it's not like it's on ESPN
like
on cable.
I get mad. People get mad about that too because they'll cut. Like some of the best parts of UFC fights are when they go into the corners after the round and you get to hear what the cornermen are
saying.
And they'll
cut that out.
They'll like straight up cut and then you go to a commercial
but
and
is
then
that
it comes back. But when you go pay-per-view and it's like the main card on pay-per-view, there's no cutting. You just go and you just hear all the stuff.
Are those fights with ads on normal ESPN or only ESPN Plus?
Both. Like, both.
Okay, well, see,
that's where
different.
It's weird.
That's different because cable, sure, there's ads.
No, so but it's on both. It's on if I'm paying ESPN Plus and I'm still seeing ads.
Because they're just streaming the ESPN broadcasts.
Sure, but like I don't know. I know people
but
have.
But I'm saying if it's a game, if it's like a football game or something that's only on ESPN Plus, like that's the only way to watch
Ooh.
It, you have to pay.
Ooh.
Are there commercials on that? Is what I'm saying.
Ooh.
Like you have to pay to watch this game. Are there commercials on that? To me, there shouldn't be. There might be.
I don't think either.
I just don't think there
knows.
Should be.
We'll see.
That's always confused me.
All right. So, yeah, match play. We'll see what happens with it in the future. And especially this is going to be really interesting because it does seem like a lot of people don't like match play. And or at least this.
That's
this,
what I'm saying.
This gave people bad taste
exactly.
in the mouth. And next year, there's supposed to be a major.
The major is going to give people bad taste no matter what.
But that this is not a good like precursor to the major that's going to be
no.
match play.
This event had a way more potential than that major ever did. Because it was an exhibition, not a major. Mm. Like this had way more potential to be a good event. Because like people, it's the same thing as like skins. Skins matches. Imagine a skins match being a major. It's like whoever wins the most skins is a major winner.
Yeah,
people would be like,
it's wild.
Like
it's
if
wild.
if the GK Pro skins match is suddenly like for a major title, people would be ticked. But as a GK Pro skins match, great.
It's
a
great
lot of
content.
Fun.
It's great content,
exactly.
but
it's
not
a great exhibition match.
Not
where you can
great
come out
competitive
and,
like a.
But it's a fun event because it puts pros in situations where like I have to run this 100-footer.
Yes,
that's a lot of fun to watch as a one-off competitive event. But it's not a lot of fun for a competitive event in the sense of like title, name on a disc, you know, big pay bonuses on the line. If I make this 150 footer,
no, I agree,
or not to make sure the guy who I beat by 10 strokes this round, I don't lose to.
Yeah, I agree. We'll see what happens moving forward with that. All right, quick little battle for Bedford recap. Shout out to Paul. Taking it down
16 strokes. It ties.
I thought it was interesting when you guys were talking on Grip Locked about like what you thought the scores were going to be. You didn't just say like, "What do we think Paul's going to shoot?" You kept being like, "What do you think the winning score is going to be?" I mean, I appreciate you trying to be like.
There was a chance that a Cody Bradshaw or someone could have popped off.
I appreciate you trying to be like open to the idea, but you know he designed the course. He knows the course really well, and he's pretty good.
Hard. The course is hard enough.
He's pretty good at disc
Paul
golf.
Paul didn't make the course look as hard as it is. The course is hard enough that I thought there was the slimmer
chance.
Of a chance, and I would have looked really stupid if I just were going, well, Paul's going to win. There's no way he doesn't.
And
even
then
though,
he doesn't, yeah.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying.
But
he
did.
Took it down.
He surprised me. I said five
I think he
down.
Surprised himself a little bit because he – I don't think he was thinking double digits.
No, I think he had shot it once before in like a video or something, but for some reason he never counted that as the course record.
Yeah.
Because he said like I didn't. He never said like I didn't actually do it. He just said like, well, that wasn't really real. That wasn't when it mattered.
Yeah.
Basically, what he kept saying.
Tournaments, a completely different ball game.
So I predicted five down each round.
Mm-hmm.
He went 6, 8, 10.
Yeah.
So I looked like a complete idiot. I was 9 strokes off.
And it's one of those courses too that. A lot of the top 10 guys did better as the as the rounds went.
Yeah.
So, like what he did, 6-8-10, a lot of other people also
Here's
improved.
A question. What Paul playing how Paul played, if this was a Pro Tour field, did he win?
I think it'd be close. I think it'd be real close. I think the course really, this course, I think it really does take away a lot of people from winning. The players that are more reliant on distance versus control, they almost have no chance of playing, winning this tournament at this course. And then also lefties that don't have forehands, they have no chance.
Yeah, Zach Melton was out there, and he was like, I think I threw one backhand drive.
And I would say right-handed players, too, that favor their forehand, which there aren't that many top-tier guys that favor their forehand over their backhand. They also wouldn't have a shot. So there'd be a lot of people that just right off the gate, this course would not suit their game.
I'll say his 10 down would have been the hot round if
the
Pro Tour is in town. But I agree.
I mean,
it would have been very close.
And no bogeys.
He had one bogey.
Oh, one bogey.
He bogeyed one of the easier holes.
Oh, no. It was
14.
I don't think it's one of the easier holes. We can discuss that at a different time. That might be a bogey bro banner topic.
Yeah, we already have a full video discussing that coming on our Patreon exclusively. 25 minutes of probably what it's probably 25 minutes of what you expect debate night to be every week. It's just Brody and I at each other's throats.
No,
for
it was good. It was good.
And I'm 16-2.
I think I walked away with the dub.
16.
But one thing I do want to talk
about. Don't get me started.
One thing I want to talk about the battle for Bedford and discuss a little bit, because I think we might actually have differing opinions here, is youth players. And this is something that I talked to Connor a little bit about, because I played, I believe, my final round with, man, he could not have been more than 20. He had to have been like 19. Maybe he couldn't even. What do you do when you're 18? What can you do when you're 18?
Everything.
Go see a rated R movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just can't drink or.
So he might not.
You can't even rent a car till you're 25.
Yeah,
why can't we change that?
So I think when you're over 18, I think the only.
You gotta pay fees out the wazoo.
I think the only cool thing you can do is go see a rated R movie. Without your parent, without an adult. Okay, so he might not have been able to do that. He might be 17. Who knows? But the question is, there was two players under the age of 20 that were in the top five, I believe, at Battle for Bedford. And there was a decent field here. Do you think players that are winning Junior Worlds, do you think players that are competing and doing really well at a young age, not 20, not 19, I'm talking about like 15, 14, 16 year olds, right? Do you think those people, are you like, oh yeah, for sure, that guy's going to be a stud? Are you confident saying that?
Some.
Okay, explain. Like why some and why not?
There's some players that you, I don't want to say names, but there's a player in mind.
Definitely don't call people out.
No, but there's a few players in mind that you can look at them and you can tell that kid or that he's getting close to his ceiling already.
Okay.
As a 15 or 14 or whatever year old, you can also see their work ethic of like, he's just crazy talented, but he's not putting in work. And there's other kids, where they're 15 years old, but able to put up 1,000 rated rounds pretty consistently. And they don't look like they're trying yet. Like you can tell, like his forehand is not even close to as good as it could be. Like he, you know what I'm saying? But they're just so consistent at what they're doing that you can tell there's a big ceiling to where they're, because it's true with older players too. You can tell when someone's bumping their head on the ceiling and when they got
so
crazy
much room,
to grow.
See,
so I think that you can look, but realistically, I think that the world champions of 10 years from now are playing the sport right now.
You think they are? Or
yes,
aren't?
I think they are.
Okay. So this is my take on it. Looking at disc golfers, I think the interesting thing is the skill level that you can acquire by throwing, let's say, 400 feet. You can be really good at disc golf and only throw 400 feet. You will never be able to compete on the Pro Tour only throwing that distance, right? So the question is their body, they're going to eventually grow into their body, right? They're going to continue to go through puberty and all that stuff and get their growth spurts and finally get into what their adult body is. The question is, how is their game going to transfer from them throwing 400 feet to now them throwing or trying to throw 500 feet? And well, I think it's very similar in golf, where you see kids that at a young age are very talented, very good, but when they have to make that switch from they're swinging right now 70, 80 miles per hour golf swings, and they start going to that 110, 115. Same thing with throwing right now. Like, they might be throwing 50 miles per hour, but
I don't
now
know,
they're cranking up to 70.
There's a lot 70. Of 15-year-olds that have elite-level distance.
A lot?
I can name three or four off the top of my head.
Yeah, but those might be, like, the Zions. Those might be the guys that are just athletic freaks.
I don't
know
that many
at.
15-year-olds, like, playing disc golf right now. Like, I'm saying I've met 10, and three or four of them are throwing 500-plus feet.
Yeah, I mean...
One of them is Gannon Burr. He just turned... 16, he's a top 20. I would argue when he shows up, he's a top 20 player in the world right now.
Well, see, like Gannon Burr, you can tell that that guy's got potential because he's already at a level. I'm not talking about those guys. Gannon Burr is the...
Those are the guys I was talking about.
Gannon Burr is the unicorn. Gannon Burr is already... In my opinion, Gannon Burr has already proven himself.
Yeah.
Right? I'm talking about the guys that are like younger than him and are doing more local scene
okay.
stuff.
So I've got a great example for
yeah,
you.
Go for it.
So you're talking about, there is a kid, I wish I knew his name because I want to give him shout outs hardcore right now, but I don't remember his name. He was playing our MJ18, I believe it was. I want to say he was only like 14. And the local course, Falling Creek Reds.
That's where he shot like 10 under.
He shot like
12 under.
I think it was 14
under.
Down.
Yeah.
My personal best is like 9 or 10, and that is a good round out there. Mm-hmm. Like, I won a local weekly with a 9 or 10 mm-hmm. of guys playing it every week. This kid shows up like second round, pops off 14 down.
Yep.
I think those are the kids you're talking about.
Yes.
The kids
because they're playing courses that yeah. right now suit their game.
They're not on tour. If they're playing local, smaller stuff.
Exactly. And also, if that person, Falling Creek is a short course.
Falling Creek Reds, yeah.
It's not a long course. So
it's got some long holes, but
sure.
yeah.
But
it's not a pitch and putt.
But if he went to, because Gannon Burr can compete
at
anywhere.
New London, yeah.
But if you, and even New London is a course that you don't need distance. You don't need distance. You don't need to be able to throw over 400 feet at New London.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
Brody, if I can only throw 400 feet, which I can, then on so many of those holes, I have to go distance driver flip up where you're going buzz.
No. I literally played with someone that had like 400 feet max distance. The kid, I think his name is Evan Smith. Is his last name Smith? I don't know. I played with him. He couldn't have thrown, or Evan Scott maybe? I think it's Evan Scott.
I thought it was Smith.
Yeah, he just won Am Worlds. I think so. Yeah, that's the guy.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's him. It might... I think that's him. He was throwing, like, beautiful flex lines that, in my opinion, like, if I was throwing those, I'd be terrified of throwing those down the fairways. But he has taught himself, and as that is his throw to get max distance, and he's very good at it. So he was able to carve out that course.
But that's
and
an
shoot.
Anomaly.
No, it's not. Those are the people I'm talking about, though.
But normal people who can throw 400 feet are going to struggle way more at New London than someone who can throw 600 feet at New London.
I agree. Yeah. I'm not saying distance.
So you need distance at New London.
I'm not saying distance doesn't help. For sure, distance helps. So I'm saying you don't need to have elite distance at New London to be able to compete. You need to have elite distance to compete at that match play tournament.
Yes.
If you couldn't throw 500 feet at that match play tournament, you had no shot. So that's what I was trying to say. But it's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting to see how kids progress, and will there be like, oh my gosh, this kid's unbelievable, right? And will they like to see how they go?
Yeah.
And again, unbelievable on courses that suit his game. Gannon Burr is a different anomaly because he is being able to compete really well at every course.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the guys that are shredding courses
they
that
look
are 300,
phenomenal
cause they're 350 playing. Feet and less.
It's the same type of people who are, or not same type of people, that made me sound like I was saying something bad about people. It's the same type of thing as like players who care a lot about their rating and so are only playing courses that suit their rating.
Mm-hmm.
So they look like a 10, 15 rated player
yep.
and then you throw them on a course that they don't know or is hard and they're like
night-night.
980 or something like that.
They're night-night. So we'll see. I think it's going to be interesting and I think that's one area of disc golf that I would definitely love to see better coverage. On the media side is, you know, in college disc golf, but also in the youth. I would love mm-hmm. to see, and again, it's not going to...
It's not round shot-by-shot coverage.
Yeah, it's not
people,
it's,
yeah.
it's not going to get... it's not going to be like high school football or anything like that. It's not going to get that big. But at least us talking about some up-and-comers.
I think people need... Yeah, when we say media, it can immediately be taken as like post-produced coverage or something.
No, yeah.
If you go film collegiate nationals, I think it actually did get filmed this year. Mm-hmm. That's not going to get your average people watching it.
I want to hear stories coming out of it.
You need to hear the storylines of, hey, Ferris State, this is their third, they won nationals 3 years in a row. They're going for number four. Mm-hmm. They had Brendan Tetloff coming into the year. He's out this year. He was their number two player. Where you have a story around Ferris State. That was all true at one point in that.
Yeah.
Where you have a story around this dynasty, and now you're invested in. Yep. I want to hear what's happening with those players.
Yeah, there's a reason. There's a reason why, you know, these pay-per-view fighting events that they do all these like backstories weeks, the week before the fight. Because if I don't know anything about these two fighters, I'm probably not going to pay attention. But yeah. If I sit down and I watch a 45 documentary about this guy, and like I see his story and his struggles and all the stuff he's overcome, I'm all of a sudden a fan of his. And I'm probably going to tune into the fight.
Exactly. So,
would love to see more of that stuff like that. All right, so Battle for Bedford, great job. Shout out to Hunter for pulling that bad boy off. I am
happy. It's not fully off my shoulders. I got to get the payouts out, but that's the last thing.
And I need paid, brother.
And it's fully off
my
shoulders.
I need paid, brother.
It'll be out by Friday. Today feels like Friday to me. I've been working for like 3 weeks straight. It just all my days blend together. Liz told me, she's like, I can't. Yeah, my car can go in the shop tomorrow. And they're gonna get to it when they get to. I'm like, well, don't put it in tomorrow. It'll be there all weekend.
Tomorrow's
Wednesday.
It's actually kind of fun though, when every day you work, so there's no difference in between a Saturday and a Monday, and you know, it's hilarious. I love seeing people's faces when, like, I have to like sign the date for something, or I have to, you know, figure out what day of the week it is, and I literally have no idea because like every day is the same almost.
Yeah.
Except for debate night, Tuesday debate nights, night.
You know,
that's how
I keep on my week. Is I say Tuesday night, that's debate night. I still got this meeting until Friday.
In. Oh, all right. So let's talk real quick before we get into the segment that honestly I'm the most excited to talk about. Let's talk real fast about this whole national tour Music City Open situation. That, you know, Paul kind of sent out a couple tweets that got people talking. I know you went on a Reddit thread, which is I stay off of Reddit now because
rabbit holes to go.
You
down.
Can just go for days reading comments on there.
I enjoy reading Reddit comments.
But so I'll quickly kind of just say my piece of what I saw from the FaceTime that he gave us, and then I know you got a couple other kind of rumors spreading around that you want to talk about. So I think real quick, a lot of people jump whenever someone says anything bad about any sort of tournament. You see a lot of people, and it's got to be the locals. It's got to be people that are either helping put the tournament on or know someone that are putting the tournament on, or maybe they put a tournament on themselves. You immediately see this like outcry of like, how dare you say anything bad? These people are working so hard. And it's like, at the end of the day, like, no one cares how hard you work if the product isn't good. And also, no, it's true.
Well,
it's true.
But you're putting the blame on the wrong people.
No, but that's the other thing is people aren't even blaming those people.
Yeah.
The course, like, it looked like it was mowed. It didn't look like the grass was long. Yeah. It looked like it was clipped. The baskets for the men were
down
in
branches.
Place. The weather, if it rains, it rains. That you can't control anything
that.
About that.
Yeah.
The issue was, and again, maybe this wasn't really in Paul's tweet, maybe this wasn't really voiced that well. The issue was the tournament was not set up well for a tournament 2 days before. You had pros showing up and being like, am I in the right spot?
Yeah.
Is this where a tournament's happening?
Where's hole one?
And I think the real issue here is there has been standards set by the Disc Golf Pro Tour.
Yes.
This is what a well-run professional event looks like.
I was told there's not even banners out right now.
There's not even tee
or
signs.
Like signage. There's tee signs, but they're course tee signs.
They're the original course tee signs. They're not tee signs that are put in from the tournament.
No, yeah. That's a thing that no one ever did till the Pro Tour. That's what I'm saying. That's the thing that the Pro Tour set the standard.
Exactly.
Of,
these
like,
are standards that are
being held here now.
And I think, again, with the world's outcry, right, like, we had four, five, six tournaments, and then we got to Worlds, and everyone's like, this is what we're expecting. And then you get to Worlds, and it's like, wait a second, what's going on? I think that's what's happening right now with the National Tour, is the National Tour didn't get the memo of, hey, this is the standards of how to run a professional event. And so these pros are showing up. And again, you can't get mad at me, because guess what? I'm not there. So I know a lot of people say that I whine about a lot of stuff and whatever. It's not me. It's all the other pros that are there. When you set a precedent, when you set like this is what a professional event looks like, and you go there and there's nothing, you're going to have people being like, what is going on?
Well, the other thing was necessarily like some of the holes on the course itself didn't leave and it didn't live up to the standard that's set by, again, probably the Pro Tour. But another issue, I think, is this isn't just an Elite Series event. This is the National Tour finale, which if you rewind back to 2015, 16, 17, this is one of the bigger events of the year back then. You know what I mean? This is the people are in a battle for the points, and this tells you this separates. I think it used to even have more points at the finale. Don't quote me on that. That could be wrong. But regardless, this was the one that kind of finalized, separated who was getting the National Tour bonuses and stuff like that. This used to be like the pride and joy of the National Tour. And so it was at IDGC, all this stuff. Like there was a lot of stuff built around it. They moved it to Music City this year for reasons that I don't fully know. It had been Music City in the past, I think. So I think
I like
they just
kind of
went back.
It's a good name.
Yeah. But then, like you're saying, you're pulling up to the course on a Tuesday when the event starts in 2 days. And there's not banners up. There's not signs up. You're trying to find hole one. I heard that the trash cans were overflowing on a lot of things. I heard from even people responding in the Twitter thread that there was trash just kind of on the course, which that's kind of hard because that could have been something that was picked up over the weekend. Players came in. That might be a Parks and Rec have to clean it
up.
But
I think it's one of those things of like at what point should the course be in tournament condition? And
I think it depends on the tier. If this is a B tier, you got to get it figured out tomorrow.
But I think 2 days in advance, If you're playing the tournament in 2 days, I think you're showing up expecting the course to be ready to go.
If this, for an elite series,
for an elite series,
if it's a B tier or a C tier,
day of
day. Well, I want to say
for
day
a C tier, like a
for
flex,
a C tier, sure. For
day
a C
of,
no one's really coming out and practicing. No, for a B tier,
day
before.
Before
a tier, I think is the same as elite series. A few days before, it's got to be ready to go. But especially when it comes to elite series. A lot of the stuff that were quote unquote issues that were like not seen as being done were not the local people's fault.
No.
Like you were saying, all the pictures I saw, the FaceTime I had, all of this,
course looks
great. The course's conditions are great. The stuff the local club did, great. The PDGA needs to own up for their tour.
Correct.
This is the same thing we saw at Worlds where it was like getting passed off onto the tournament director and to the local crew and like, oh, I don't know how they missed painting these lines. You're coming in running your national tour finale. Your name's attached to it. This isn't the Music City Club National Tour Finale. This is the PDGA National Tour Finale. This isn't... So that's why whenever we say something and people come after us of like defending the local club, I want to defend the local club more than anyone because the local club's name shouldn't be dragged through the mud over stuff that the PDGA should be held responsible
for.
No,
in my opinion, this has nothing to do with the people in Nashville. Has nothing to do. From what we saw on Paul's FaceTime, the course looks like it's ready to be played. The problem is it doesn't look like it's ready to be played at an elite
at
series
an elite
event.
Level.
It literally looks like it's a good course
and
to go out to play.
And even the distances are confusing. It seems like a relatively short course. It seems like it's difficult because of some of the like lines are tough.
We'll see. I will say this. I do love a good train wreck. I will be tuning it.
Oh, I'll be tuning in
and
as well.
We might have to do either a live companion or we might have to do like a little recap or something after the first day.
The other rumor that I had heard, and this is, again, I'm calling it a rumor because I have no way to confirm this because I'm not on the ground, is it seems like that the plan is kind of to move the FPO baskets into the FPO positions.
They have one basket for the MPO and FPO.
Yeah, so it seems
what
like,
it looks like
for FPO to practice some of the courses that there were marksman baskets and like temporary like pop-up practice baskets put out.
Trick shot baskets.
Yeah,
is what we call
for
them.
The FPO to practice.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable.
It's not a good look.
If, again, I'm not there to confirm that. If what is being said about that side is true.
Not a good look.
Absolutely unacceptable because then as a PDGA, for the National Tour finale, you're taking the stance that the MPO is more important at this event.
Yes.
Which, I mean, if that is the case and if that is true, I hope that gets publicized a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I hope a lot more FPO players. That's the only reason I'm like iffy on it is because that's something Paige Pierce would have called out immediately. And I haven't heard from her. I haven't seen anything from her.
Is she at this event? I don't think she's at
this event. Oh, that's true. She's boycotting
National
Tour. She's
boycotting National Tour.
I still think someone... that's why I'm kind of lenient. I almost didn't want to bring it up because I'm like... That's something an FPO player surely would have said something about.
This is where
I also trust the person who sent it to me.
Yeah,
so.
This is where it's really unfortunate because I get to see a lot of things behind the scenes that are said, but they don't get publicly said, and I wish they did. But this is kind of what I was talking with the chat before we went live.
Paige is there this weekend.
I thought
she got confirmed by chat.
I thought she said she was boycotting.
I think she was boycotting the National Tour because of Worlds, but maybe she must have decided to play Music City.
Interesting.
She signed up last week.
Oh, so maybe something changed in the last week. But I think I do think right now disc golf pros are in a weird spot because, you know, we were talking a little bit about like would a pro call in tonight? Is a pro going to call in tonight and maybe stir some things up with me? The thing is like a lot of people. They don't want to ruffle any feathers,
yeah.
Right? And unfortunately, I think sometimes you do have to ruffle feathers to let people know what's going on. So we'll see. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. So back to the basket thing. I know Haley King is there, and now it appears Paige Pierce is there. I have a hard time believing neither of them said anything if that basket thing is the case. So it's something to keep an eye on. But that is what I have been told is the case.
I haven't checked Paige's Instagram story today, so
we would have heard.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
we'll see.
It's definitely something to keep. That's why I kind of wanted to make sure
we did have photos of
those baskets
on the course.
Yes, but I just
we'll leave it at that. Yeah. We'll see if there's more information that comes of it. All right, we're gonna go now into quite possibly my favorite newest segment.
Oh, heck yeah.
And shout out to Prize Picks, our first sponsor for debate night. Heck yeah. If you haven't heard of Prize Picks yet, you're going to want to listen and tune in.
Yeah.
I don't think me, Hunter, and Trevor have been more excited about something in a long time to talk about because disc golf finally has daily fantasy, something that I was talking a little bit about it on my Twitter. About man, if we can get a little bit of action in disc golf, I think it would bring new eyeballs for sure. And then also what we were talking about earlier about how some people might not be interested in a tournament or because of the course or whatever, you start doing daily fantasy and now all of a sudden people want to win that money. So the game is actually very simple. You're going to basically pick over or under on players' stats to win a multiple of your entry fee. Right now, they currently just have strokes up. So we'll kind of go over that a little bit. But soon they're going to be adding birdies, finishing place, and also FPO will be added. They should have FPO added by Friday.
Oh, for the Music City?
Yes.
Oh.
So this can be really, really exciting situation going on. And basically what you have to do is you have to combine two players to make an entry. So you can't just pick one person. You have to pick two players. And the more players you pick in your entry, the higher the payout. So if you wanted to, you know, just be kind of iffy on it, pick two. If you really want to go all out, you can pick five.
Five player power play all the way.
And you can really see some big moves happening. If you guys want to play at home, you can use the code DEBATE, DEBATE, and new users will get 100%. First deposit match up to $100. So essentially, if you put $20 in, they'll match you up $20 right there. Boom, you're ready to go. And we're going to do basically a little competition between we're going to test it out this week and see how it goes. We're going to do a little competition between me, Hunter, and Trevor where we basically will pick three people, okay? Over or under on three people, and then we get to decide whether or not we want to do the flex play or the power play. If we do the flex play, we only have to have two of the three entries hit. If you do the power
play, you can get one.
No, you have to hit two.
Yeah. Oh, my phone says.
No, two.
Oh, out of three. Out of three. I only have two on my screen right now.
Because we're picking three.
Yeah.
The power play, all three of yours have to hit. But if they do, you get 5x your entry. Okay. And the flex play, if they all hit, you get 2.25x. So, like, you know, you still get a decent kick.
You got to balance it.
But Trevor did say he's going power play all the way.
Yeah, Trevor said he's a power play guy.
He could easily end up.
There's going to be.
End up zero.
There will be events. This is not one of them for me. There will be events that I am a power play guy hardcore.
I'm not going power play because I don't know that much about this course.
That's why I'm not going power play. Trevor's crazy. We all know Trevor's crazy.
So what we're going to do, I'm going to give you guys my three picks. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I'm going to give you, we're also going to go and give you what we call our parked picks. Our parked picks are absolutely 100%. You're going to hit it.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Locked in.
The freaky picks are the, I don't know what's going on.
This is if you want to get freaky.
Yeah. And I'm going to give all three. Hunter's going to give those two, and then he's going to save his third one for grip locked when you and Trevor kind of go through each one.
My freaky pick is not in my three. Because I'm not getting freaky this week.
Oh, no.
So I have a freaky pick.
My freaky pick is in.
I have my locked pick, and I have my freaky pick. But I do not have my freaky pick. I'm not getting freaky week one. It's week one. I can't get freaky right now.
So I'll just talk real quick.
You go through your three. Yeah. I'm gonna give my three on.
It's a par. So it's a par 58. Okay. And right now they have Paul and Ricky at the lowest at 49. I'm gonna first tell you right now, I do not like the even numbers. I am not a fan because 49 means that Paul has to shoot a 48. Yeah. If he shoots a 49, I'm in. So I love these half numbers. So I'm going to go ahead and say my parked pick and someone that is due is going to be Kevin Jones.
Ooh.
50.5. Over.
Oh, thank goodness.
Going the
over. I thought you were crazy.
Going over. You thought I was going under?
I thought you were going for the under.
I'm going over 50.5 with Kevin Jones. I just don't think, I don't think this course is going to be – I think it's going to take some time for these guys to figure it out. I don't believe he played this course last year, if I'm correct. And, from some of the holes that I saw from Paul and some of the distances and stuff, I don't know how well it's going to suit his game. So I think Kevin Jones, 50.5 over, is the parked pick.
All right, I'm going to do you better than a parked pick. I am so confident in this. This isn't even a parked pick. This is the CTP for the tournament.
Oh,
this guy, since the year started, has just been waiting for some tender Tennessee disc golf. I am so confident in the Chris Dickerson under. They have the line at 50 under. This dude, he's coming out. Round one, he's shooting a 48. He has been waiting for Tennessee disc golf the entire year.
Didn't you just tell me that he shot the lowest round last at four? No, he didn't even shoot the lowest round.
No, he's
right?
49 last year.
He shot 49 last year at this course.
It's a new year. It's a new year, a new Chris.
I heard they made the course harder.
New year, new Chris, under. This guy lives for Tennessee disc golf.
Okay.
He's going to know this course better than anyone else out there. I am. When I saw that, that was the first pick on both screens. I said, that's my lock pick. And that's my three.
All right. My freaky pick, is none other than Nico.
This is going to be interesting because this gives us, we don't have the same picks. Again, I was scared I was showing up with the same picks.
No. Obviously, we're not going to have the same picks. We might some weeks, but this week we definitely don't. 51.5 is what he is at right now.
You like the
and
point fives.
I just think this course potential, again, I love the point fives. I love giving that half stroke. I think this course has potential to frustrate him, especially. I heard that there are a handful of holes that are like must get birdies. So it's one of those courses that if you do not get those birdies on those holes, it can really kind of, I think it's going to mess with him a little bit. I'm going over 51.5.
That's your freaky.
I think he's going to come out first round and probably shoot five under.
That is a tough one. That is a tough one. My freaky, it could have made it into my picks. I'm not week one. I went a little safer. I do have one pick that's going to surprise people, I think, when I reveal them on Grip Locked on Thursday, but that's regardless. I'm going with the Emerson Keith.
Ooh.
His line's at 52. Emerson Keith under.
Under, yeah.
Because last year, he went 56 round one, which scared me. Scared me hard. Rounds two and three, he went 51-51. So,
what do you think? He's got the course figured out.
The other thing of why I'm not.
He's also coming up high with the match play.
Sure, but he's also last year I think Emerson was having a slightly better year than he is this year.
Yeah, he's due.
If you're like, you know what, this is my week. I'm feeling freaky this week. I think Emerson Keith the under. I'm not going to call it a great pick, but I think it's a pick worth looking at because he's definitely capable of that. Shooting better than 52. He did it twice last year. He can, and he just might do it again. But the Chris Dickerson, I mean, I don't know if I've ever been more confident in something in my life.
So there you go. Those are our picks for this week. Again, you can use the code DEBATE, and new users will get 100%. That's 100% free deposit matchup to $100. Again, use the code DEBATE. Prize picks, you can go on either the website or you can download the app. And I think it's just... Honestly, now, like, I was a little bit interested in looking at paying attention to this event, mainly just because of what Paul was talking about. But now, obviously, I'm really going to be paying attention. I will definitely be having these players star.
I'm going to be refreshing my
and seeing my how they go.
U-disc to see.
We don't have, as of right now, we do not have, I mean, we can maybe figure it out right now. What do we want to do with the winner?
We don't have that yet. Well, this show, the winner, you're talking about for the three.
Yeah, for overall, because we're gonna do this each week, so it should be 3 weeks of this, so essentially 9 picks.
Yeah, we gotta track it. And
what's the winner?
It's more fun if you put something for the loser. We'll decide by grip locked.
Okay.
And a reminder, it's prizepicks.com if you want to play along. And what was the?
Someone else said I'm liking Emerson under 52.5 round one. So.
Oh, has the line changed to 52.5 now?
It might have. Has it changed? Would you lock it in at?
I locked it in at 52. I was feeling confident at 52.
Up.
If it's at 52.5,
well, I mean, it's going the wrong way. That's
better for me.
No, it's not.
I know it's not technically.
No, you're locked in at 52. Oh, wait, no, that is better than you. That is better for you because that means everyone's picking the under. Yeah. Okay. All right. Prize Picks, shout out to them. Go check it out, man. I think this is incredible. I think this is something that disc golf definitely needs for sure. I think it's going to add a lot of excitement. I'm excited for it, and I can't wait.
What are your three picks?
I didn't even say my last one.
I mean, unless I missed it.
The world champ, James Conrad. Under 51, baby.
Oh.
He's shooting the 40s. He's shooting the 40s.
I read that. I thought about it.
You don't like it?
I wasn't feeling it.
I think this course is going to be so many putter shots. It's going to be so many putter shots.
I went a little off stats, a lot off of gut. My gut was not feeling James Conrad.
No, I think he's playing pretty well right now. I did get to watch a little bit of him in the match play.
So
I think he's playing pretty good. I got James Conrad under 51. I got Nico over 51.5. And I got Kevin Jones over 50.5.
I have none of those.
Well, there you go. We'll see how it plays out.
I'm very interested to see Trevor's picks. Trevor and I were texting a little bit without revealing information because we wanted to surprise each other. And I think we were thinking the same page on a few things.
All right. What does Twitter think? It's time.
Oh,
I think
time.
This is what everyone's ready for.
I'm excited for this.
What does Twitter think my worst takes are? Okay. So here we go. We've got Aaron saying added cash at Worlds is some conspiracy. All right. We've got Nathan saying complaining about ball golf versus golf. Which I love how he said ball golf. Versus golf. Wait, I'm so confused about that.
Playing a ball golf versus golf?
Maybe ball golf. Okay. Oh, he's
Stop
saying ball golf
itself.
Versus. No,
oh,
no,
the,
no.
The
I
the
think
phrasing,
he's saying
the phrasing.
Yeah. For a second, I thought he was going ball golf versus disc golf. But I think he's just going off of me saying stop calling it ball golf. That's not a real sport. We got Carson saying that talking about disc choice shouldn't be a thing because other sports don't. No other sports have literally thousands of different options to use as your main tool, weapon, equipment. So me talking about how commentators should stop saying specifically the name of the disc, and rather they should actually tell you it's a flippy fairway driver.
Here's Steph Curry lining up in his Under Armour shoes for the three with a Spalding ball.
And it goes in the Wilson rim.
Yeah, like.
And then we've got, V Divinity, I believe. I hope this guy calls in. I hope all these guys call in. And I did respond to a lot of them saying, hey, debate night, call in. The number is going to be showing up on the screen shortly. Silas, you got that potentially? Okay. Silas, you could probably throw the number up now just so people can see it because we're going to jump in there real quick.
Just don't answer a call if it comes in yet.
So if you guys want, just wait, but you can have the calls going. He said that you're good.
Oh, that I'm good.
No, that I'm good.
Oh, that you're good. Okay.
Which I don't know if I've ever actually said I'm good at disc golf.
No, more, a lot more of than times any I say time you've I'm said you're
bad.
Trash.
Yeah. So that's interesting. However, at the end of the day, if you ask me, are you good at disc golf? I would resoundingly say yes.
I think it's where you define the line of good. It's because, like, I would say I'm good at disc golf.
I mean, are there? Like, I mean, how many good players in disc golf are there?
Well, that's
20?
Where you're, that's where you're defining the line.
Yeah,
that's
if you think there's only 20 players that are good at disc golf in the entire world, then yes, I am not good at disc golf.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If you think there's 100 good players of disc golf in the world, then yes, I am good at disc golf.
Yeah, that's, and if you think there's 5,000-10,000 good players,
are
then yeah, I'm good at disc golf.
Are you
golf.
In there? Okay. I didn't know where you're going to place yourself. All right. What is your world? What is your world ranking? Okay.
I think I was in the top 100 in Virginia, so there's that.
All right, and then we got Tyler saying that announcers should not root for discs to hit baskets or go in. That was a big one. Not displaying / talking about the disc the player is throwing. That was a repeat. Probably shouldn't even said that. Sorry. And then James, the last one we got is comparing it way too much to golf. Like, I get the concept of disc golf came from golf. But we don't have to make every single thing the exact same. I don't see the problem of using some golf terms and repurposing them for disc golf. So that's
have you ever
that's a good
have
one.
You ever has your stance ever been everything from golf should come to disc golf?
No.
Okay. I was going to debate you if that was the case, but
no. I think there are some there's a lot of things that disc golf does right now that golf doesn't do. That is good. And then there are...
What are some of those?
I would... Oh, gosh. Well, let me think. Give me a second.
I'm saying that would be good for people to hear.
Yeah. I mean, I would say...
Like, here's stuff that disc golf's doing that
I would keep doing. I would say right now for, like, the smaller tournaments, there isn't as much, like, crowd control in the sense that fans can kind of roam around a little bit more. It's not as strict. I would say that a lot, like, just the cost of things, right? The cost of getting in... A lot of tournaments are free to get into. The ones that do cost money, you're not paying for parking as well. So the cost of going to an event is also way cheaper. I would say the way that they actually do have live coverage and post-produce, that's not something that golf really has. But I think in the social media world, I think that works really well. I just don't like it that it's not under the umbrella of the Disc Golf Pro Tour. And then I'd probably say like some of like the actual rules that apply to disc golf. I mean, I would have to think about it, but there are rules that obviously aren't the same.
Yeah, like they've been like catered towards disc golf.
Yeah, you can't do those rules in golf, but you can do them in disc golf. So, I mean, there are things for sure, but I don't know. So, yeah.
I thought it'd be good to hear that.
Hunter did put me on the spot there, but I feel like I bounced out of it a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just saying.
You bounced out of it.
I've never heard you say that there's things that disc golf does that you know, is good that golf doesn't do. So I was just curious what those things were.
Maybe I should just be a little more positive, man.
Well, I think
every once in a while, sprinkling a little positivity.
If your negative take came with a...
Positive take?
But not every time.
I hate that.
Not every time.
I hate when people...
You don't have to compliment Sam with your Twitter followers.
I hate that.
But if you were like, look, I will give props to the Pro Tour. They're doing this right, but gosh, can we please address this?
I hate that, though.
I think sometimes it's necessary.
No, I'm good. I'm good when you need to say it. So that way, like Paul's situation, if Paul would have said, hey, listen, the course looks great. It's really nicely done.
To direct the
to know that
right
it's
direction.
Not that. But hey, it's not set up for an elite series. That I think it's okay. I don't want to say, Hunter, you're a super nice guy, dude. Like you've always been a really good friend. I think you're really awesome. You're funny. But you suck at ping pong.
I thought you were going to say, but you're just not built for trick shots.
I should have. I just think, you know, it is. I'm a pretty positive person. If you know, like if you've been around me in person, I feel like I'm decently positive. But if it's also one of those things that if you seek out certain things about someone or you have this like mindset of who someone is, then those are the only things that are really going to stick out to them.
Yeah.
So, sure. I mean, I feel like if you look at my Twitter feed right now, I mean, I feel like in the last couple of weeks, I've posted stuff about like Haley King. I've posted like eagle shots.
You've done a lot of positive.
Paul winning. Like, if you look at my Twitter feed, I post a lot of good stuff, but if you're looking specifically for the negative,
well, it's just that negative gets shared beyond just your
also
Twitter.
Hey, shout out to Marweed's Cookie for calling out this shirt, the polo, funny for the name. Night. I feel like I went tropical tonight. Hopefully you guys are that are watching this are enjoying the polo choice. No one cares how hard you try. No one cares how nice you are in person. All right, I think we're ready for some calls.
Yeah, I don't have anything to debate you with.
I feel like I really did a good job of like building up people that actually call, because our biggest complaint that we've had, other than like don't do giveaways, because we got some of that, but our biggest complaint we've had.
Who complains about a giveaway?
People are upset that we are like making people leave a review. Not making people, but doing a giveaway for people that
if you don't want the disc, don't leave a review.
Yeah, whatever. But the other thing was like we're answering questions. People are calling in.
Yeah.
Like this is not like a...
this isn't a Q&A.
Hey, I'm having really hard problems with my like girlfriend right now. She just doesn't seem... like I'm not trying to give relationship advice out here. I want someone.
Has that happened? Have I missed that phone call?
No, that hasn't happened yet. It could. Yeah. It could. We're looking for people that all those topics. If you agree with those people, or anything that we've talked about tonight, we're looking for people that literally disagree with something that either Hunter has talked about, I have talked about. We're not really looking for, hey, what do you guys think about this? So hopefully those people call in, and
we
got our first caller.
The lines are now open, so feel free to call in.
All right, Silas.
Silas will cue us when we have a caller.
All right, someone's called in. Here we go. The number is online.
All right, we should be good.
All right, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Who we got here, and where are you from?
This is Spencer from Nashville.
Got okay. Someone from Nashville.
Local to the tournament.
Here we go.
How you doing, man?
Oh, doing good. I tweeted you earlier today. How you doing, man?
I'm chilling, man.
Yeah, I just didn't appreciate the disrespect that you and Paul McBeth had on the disc golf community in Nashville due to the fact that all these guys put on a bunch of work there, and for him to not put in context what was going on and all that, I just felt like it was not good for the community. So, well, okay. I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, what did I specifically say? I guess the thing is, in my opinion, it is kind of open to interpretation, which we talked about.
And that's the issue, I think.
Yeah, we talked about a little
interpretation.
Sure, and I think we talked about that a little bit tonight, that it probably should have been worded a certain way to kind of direct it to the PDGA. But at the same time, like, I agree with you that it should have been worded differently, but I also disagree with you that what I said was attacking the community of Nashville. Like, I never, like, nothing, like, if you really wanted to read it that way, you would have to kind of stretch it to make it sound like that. But from my tweet, I don't think it really goes, like, I didn't call out and say, hey, all you local people in Nashville, get your course up to snuff, you know?
Sure.
Like, yeah, but I agree with you that it should have.
At the same time, you quote tweeted him and then put like a laughy face that it was a whatever, kind of a joke in a sense. When people in Nashville have been looking forward to this tournament for over a year now, I know I've had it. I took off vacation just to come watch it. So to kind of see all that stuff that goes on today, they kind of.
Well, can I ask you a question real quick? Can I flip it a little bit? So,
yeah.
Are you more upset that Paul tweeted that out and I retweeted it, or are you more upset that the PDGA isn't putting on a good event in Nashville?
No, I don't think that the PDGA is not putting on a good event. I've played those courses. Minus Mill Creek, I've never played
people,
down Mill Ridge.
People had no idea where to go during the practice
that,
round.
But,
there was no signage.
I don't discredit that. I think that, yes, that should have been put together, but I also think that the pros need to do a better job of conveying what they're talking about versus just putting something out there that isn't accurate, because the course is a great course. I've played it plenty of times, and I think the people in Nashville love that course. So I don't know. I just I felt like it wasn't a good telling story. So.
I mean, we didn't really dive into it that much on Twitter. I'm actually going back to see exactly what I said. So I think if I could go back in time, see, this is where it's tough because Paul added the PDGA and said, is this for real? So he's already directing his, I guess you could say, like, not concern, but what his not disgust, but I don't know what the word is, but he's
disgust.
Yeah, he's already directing it towards the PDGA. And this was also another comment that, or another thing that we discussed at one point, that fun courses, like there's a lot of fun courses in Dallas that I love playing that have no business being on the elites, like an elite series event, right? Like my favorite course in Dallas is Dash's Track. The longest hole is 300 feet. The average hole is probably 175 feet. Love that course. Has no business being a national tour event, a disc golf pro tour event, or anything like that. So I think Paul's big disgust, I guess, almost, is Paul's definitely trying to push events to become more professional and to set a standard of what a elite series event looks like. And I think when he showed up and saw that there was nothing set up yet, there was no ounce of like an actual event is happening here in 2 days. And then again, it's not a knock on the course. It could be the best course in Nashville, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's good for an elite series event. Same thing as how everyone was trashing the course at the match play event because it's on a golf course. That might be a really fun course to play, but to watch, it might not be that fun to watch. So I think that I agree with you. If I could go back in time, maybe in my tweet, instead of saying course, where I said this course is, and then smile, laughing face, I could have probably redirected that again back to the PDGA, so there wasn't a confusion of where I'm saying. I guess.
Well, I've got a question.
Yeah, go for it.
So you were like involved pretty heavily with like the Nashville community leading up to this event.
No, not myself. I'm a big member of the disc golf community here in Nashville. I did not help out, but I know the guys that did help out.
And yeah.
They did a lot of work there. And
oh, like absolutely.
Said, we've all been looking forward to this event for a while.
Absolutely. So. What I was going to ask, though, is do you happen to know when the PDGA's feet like got on the ground? Like, when did the PDGA show up to get this course, like with the banners and advertising, directional signs, the stuff that they're bringing in that, you know, you guys don't have control over? Where it's like it's on them to set the course up, because I think to me that's what looked like it was lacking. When sure, were they on the ground to get that stuff set up?
Sure, that's a fair question, but at the same time, we've been dealing with the tropical storm here in Nashville over the past 4 days. It's been raining heavily, and really you've not been able to do anything if y'all have been checking out the weather there. So it's been pretty bad, and it's going to be bad for the next day or so too. So I mean, these guys are doing all they can out there from what I'm seeing, and I just felt,
well, yeah,
and I know, Brody explained it a little better.
Yeah. I know me personally, like,
because
I've put on, I've never put on an event of this scale,
yeah.
But like, I would also, if someone would have came out to, which is slightly different because we're the one putting on the events, mm-hmm. like it's our name in the title versus the PDGA's name in the title. But if someone would come out to New London and said something about the course, I would have stood up and been like, heck no, you're not saying something. These guys, like the Bedford Parks and Rec crew.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah. But at the same time, same thing can be said at Worlds with the fort and different stuff like that, where when the PDGA's name is on the title, the fact that it's ever a question of it's on the local community is crazy to me.
It should never be.
This should not be the local community or the local TD's responsibility at all.
Yeah.
The PDGA needs to be doing more for their national tour to where they're showing up 3 to 4 weeks in advance to be like, hey, local community, what can we do to help you do X, Y, and Z? What can we do to make sure that banners are out, that all this stuff that we're bringing, it's our responsibility. What can we do to help make that easy on y'all versus you guys getting the course in perfect condition as good as you can with storms coming through and everything, but then the PDGA dropping the ball, and then it makes the local community feel unappreciated and feel like people are coming after them when that's not the intention.
Yeah. And I'll say this, two things. One, I think a lot of players have also seen Jeff Spring like at the forefront of making sure things are correct. If something is wrong, he's out on the course getting it done, like getting his hands dirty and getting it done. And so when they don't see the PDGA doing the same, it leaves a bad taste in their mouth. And then the second thing I'll say is when I tweet sometimes, I kind of feel like everyone that's going to read this tweet knows where my mind is coming from. And that's probably not fair. And I should probably try to do a little bit better of context. But like, people know that I've been on the PDGA with Worlds and other things, national tour events and stuff. And so when this kind of happened, just in my head, that's what I assumed everyone would also assume, that the tweet was about the PDGA and not about the locals. The fact that locals do as much as they do to disc golf courses absolutely blows my mind. So like, those are the people that are really getting a lot of the work done. The volunteers that come out to do all this stuff, like, it's absolutely incredible how many people will come out and do that. It's when the PDGA has their number, their name on there, and when something goes wrong, it just seems to be where they even sometimes be like, well, sorry, we had no control.
They're like, oh, we just got here. We don't know.
Yeah, they didn't get it done.
Yeah, where it should fall on the PDGA.
So yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you. The tweet probably should have been worded differently.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate it. Thanks for clearing it all up. And like I said, I've been looking forward to this event for a while, and I know a lot of other people have been as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we do appreciate you all. And I just wish, like we said, maybe the tweet was worded better, but I think in the future it'll all go better. And appreciate y'all's time. And
yeah, hey, we appreciate you calling in, man.
Thanks for the discussion.
Yeah, hopefully you have a good turn. Enjoy the tournament.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, man. Take care. It kind of almost kind of goes a little bit too whenever I like do talk about like a tournament and I'm like, this is what should happen or should change. And people are like, no, B tiers shouldn't do that. Or my local C tier. And it's like, I'm not talking about local C tiers. I'm talking about the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Same kind of thing as when I say something about a tournament, I'm never attacking a volunteer that's supposed to be told what... The volunteers are supposed to be told what to do.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to be like, hey, there's a tree over here.
I think that's the biggest issue is for years, the top level of our sport has been ran by local communities, where the Pro Tour changed that stigma, right? To where the Pro Tour is going to come in and like, I have played Idlewild. I couldn't tell you who ran Idlewild. I couldn't tell you the TD of Idlewild. It's probably technically Jeff Spring in a way. But if there's an issue, players have an avenue where they go directly to the Pro Tour, mm-hmm. and the Pro Tour fixes that issue. The local community gets the course ready, the Parks and Rec mows the course and gets the course looking good, but the Pro Tour comes in and the Pro Tour takes care of it.
Yeah.
And the Pro Tour also takes all the heat for it.
They roll out the red carpet, and if something goes bad,
it's on the Pro Tour. You never hear a Pro Tour event where people are coming after the local community. And I think the reason that it feels like that at PDGA events is the second heat starts coming, the PDGA seems to go into the shadows, and it's like the local community is left to fend for themselves and fight their own battle. And we saw the exact same thing at Worlds, and that just ticks me off, because like, that's what I was saying at Worlds, is like, I don't want to run a PDGA event. Mm-hmm. I'd love to run a Pro Tour event, because the battle for Bedford, if something goes bad, I would personally, after what I've seen this year, feel like the PDGA didn't have my back.
Technically volunteers? Did I attack volunteers by attacking the PDGA?
No.
I feel like they get paid.
The PDGA's average salary
they get paid.
Very nice.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Silas, we got another one?
Yeah, do we have another call?
Bring them in. Let's go.
No calls. Feel free to call back in.
Maybe that first call scared people away. That first call was actually good.
That first call brought the energy. I liked it.
That was good.
I liked it.
That's what we're looking for. Moneta and Fallen Creek look great for the battle for Bedford. Todd, appreciate it, brother.
That's all Bedford.
I'm excited about
Bedford County Parks and Rec.
I'm excited about going back out to Moneta.
Moneta's a great course.
I played it once, and I was absolutely... This was like the second
but see,
or
that's
third
the other
month
thing
I was
is
in.
Like,
it was trash.
What I was saying is like the battle for Bedford, if there was heat, it would be properly directed to me and it realistically just directed to me. But because it was our name on the tournament. It was us running and hosting the tournament.
Call not working for me for some reason.
Is the number back on the screen? But when it's like an event like the PDGA National Tour Elite Series finale, then it's a whole different story. Because like, if the feather banners weren't up and you didn't know where to go, I was the one that hammered those into the ground.
I think also getting all that, it's one of those things that I would love to see. Do we got a call or no? Okay. Just let us know if someone calls it. I think it's one of those things too that I would love to see where right now disc golf events are very when the actual competitive play starts,
yeah.
right? I would love to see it drawn out a little bit more to where there's stuff going on Wednesday. There's stuff going on Tuesday to where it kind of gets the hype around and also builds a little bit to where maybe some people are like, hey, what's going on in town? Like, what's happening? And maybe showing up. So a lot of people are saying the call is not working.
Well, I think it's because if someone's on it, like if someone calls, then it's not. We're getting a lot of voicemails being left.
So I think people are trying to call in, but it's not working, potentially.
Should I just like pick a voicemail and just hear their topic and we can talk about that for a second?
Oh,
we got a call.
We got one. We got one. Okay. So I think maybe too many people are calling
maybe,
in.
Maybe we're getting too many calls in. Are we live?
Hello. Oh,
how's
we're
it
good.
Going?
What's up, guys?
Who we got on the phone?
Hey, this is Josh from Texas.
Hey, what's going on?
I don't know if it's like necessarily an argument, but I just want to talk a little bit about the whole post-produced stuff. I think it needs a little more credit than you guys are giving it.
How? What do you mean? How so?
So, I was just looking up like the NFL on YouTube.
Uh huh.
Just alone, week one from, let's say, the Cowboys or something, it has 5 million views, and that's just the highlights with no commentary, nothing.
Yep.
And the actual viewership, it's maybe 14 million.
Of the live game?
So if you talk about putting somebody on the commentary, like two or three like major NFL pros,
mm-hmm.
Those views would go up.
Wait, do you think we don't like post production?
No, I think you do, but then I also hear you guys say I never watch post produced.
Well, I mean,
I personally don't.
Well, I actually watch it to get ready for a course. So I use it a lot to like watching film to see what other players like. I will be watching over the next couple of weeks a lot of USDGC coverage to see how players attack different holes. So that's how I consume it. Now, I think some people will prefer post-produced and some people will prefer watching it live. I've never said post-produced should go away. I think maybe there's different ways of being creative and having like, you know, like you said, a highlights package or potentially even like having, let's say Calvin shoots the course record, right? Having a video that goes up that's 7 minutes long. And it's literally every single shot from Calvin shooting the course record, nothing else. I think people would love watching that stuff and people would love consuming that stuff. My whole thing is, where did you go to see those highlights?
You just go on YouTube and you look at the view count, you can see.
No, what YouTube channel?
NFL, the actual NFL YouTube channel.
And that's my point.
Yeah.
That you didn't go to some random company, you went to the NFL.
No,
so that,
but,
what?
No, I see what you're saying with that. With the whole, I mean, that's the whole money side of things. I don't even know how you would solve that.
Well, no,
problem.
It's a company side of things. And again,
right, yeah.
my point is, I've seen this firsthand where people are people at the beginning of the season told me that. They, even though I don't think I actually ever made it on Jomez, but they said, can't wait to see you on Jomez, when that would never have, like, if I was an NFL football player going into my first season, they never would have said, hey, can't wait to see you on Fox. They would have said, can't wait to see you in the NFL. Can't wait to see you play an
right.
NFL game. So I think that's just,
well,
it's just.
That's fair too then for the Disc Golf Pro Tour also, isn't it? Because isn't it not necessarily the official disc golf entity itself?
I don't know what that means. The Disc Golf
like,
Pro Tour
isn't
is the Pro Tour.
Isn't the PDGA the actual
no.
Disc Golf Association?
Well, for a long time, the PDGA was the like the thing, but the Pro Tour has become like the go-to tour, which would be similar to like the NFL. The only sport you can really compare it to would be like a golf situation where
there's a governing body
that is
the
PDGA,
like,
right.
And
yeah.
then there's the tour that mm-hmm. is the Pro Tour.
So
yeah, well, and then also just the point of just live versus streaming anything right now.
Yeah,
music, TV, movies. I mean, literally everything is consumed post, basically.
Except for sports.
People who still have TV, but I haven't had cable for who knows how long.
Yeah, except for sports.
The biggest thing with sports, I think,
right,
is it's a moment that happens that in other sports, like I always go to the Duke Carolina game. When Austin Rivers, you might not know Duke Carolina basketball, but when Austin Rivers hit the shot years ago, the buzzer beater winner, if I missed that moment, then I don't care about it because I missed it live. You remember where you were at when a great sports moment happened. Mm-hmm. And in disc golf, again, the James Conrad shot, if we only had that on post-produced coverage, everyone's going to be experiencing it at different times, and then we're going to miss that hype boost, right? That everyone blowing up on Twitter, stuff like that.
I saw it live, so I couldn't imagine having to see it post-produced, but just I don't know, because I mean, when you look at the views on Jomez compared to the disc golf pro tour,
the disc golf pro tour, the disc golf pro tour would get those views if all the post produced was on their channel.
Yes and no. A big part is the live coverage has to improve quality.
Post produced.
Oh, you're saying the post produced if it was on their channel?
If they hired a post production team to film and post on their thing, and the reason why I know that is go to Central Coast, go to GK that has way less subscribers and hasn't been around nearly as Jomez. And when they get a final card at a big event, look at the views and tell me that they're not that similar. So it's the whole thing of where the view count is awesome, and Jomez has shown that when they don't film, they have their practice rounds. GK Pro has their skins matches. These media companies have proven that they can post content outside of actual competitive post-production and get views. So it's not
should the DGPT take over that role from like a Jomez or a GK Pro just because they can, even though
Jomez
has basically created something that wasn't even there to begin with?
Well, I don't think Jomez was the first. I think Terry Miller was the first
to do
pro
stuff. There's a lot of older stuff.
Disc Golf Planet.
Disc Golf Planet, yeah.
Back in the day.
They were the first ones to do it well.
Jomez is the first to like perfect it.
Yeah, and to make it popular for sure.
Right.
But if I'm the disc golf pro tour and I'm trying to advance the pro tour, that's what I'm thinking about.
Well, that's like we talked about on Griplock, where eventually everyone can't be buddy buddy when business is on the line. Eventually stuff's gonna get cutthroat to where like the pro tour is gonna have to make a tough decision for the good of the tour.
Yeah.
At some point.
All right.
Yeah, I guess that's the hard part, is figuring out where do you stop it and when do you get somebody else in to do the thing.
That's why Jeff Spring's making those big bucks to make those decisions. So but hey, we appreciate the call. I love always talking about that. And hopefully that makes sense. We're not against post-production. We just want it to be shifted to a different spot.
Yep, sweet man. Appreciate it.
Yep, take it easy, brother. Have a nice night.
Better.
I like the hang-up tone on that. It's very satisfying.
Is that new?
Do-do-do. Well, I normally mute the guy and then hang up.
No, I like the hang-up tone.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I've never heard it before. So it's satisfying to me. It's
Someone
like
said,
ASMR.
Disc Golf Pro Tour, just buy 20 more cameras. I think
boom.
The problem is you can get more cameras, but you can't get as many units.
I think
everything
we're talking about, like I said weeks ago, everything we're talking about, I think the Pro Tour is doing it in
a slow
phase in.
Bringing them in. These have been good so far. These honestly have been the two best calls, I would say. Is it three calls? Two calls?
I think this is our third call that we're bringing in.
Hello?
Bringing in right now.
Hello?
9, 3, 4, 5.
We just blasted their number.
No, it was only like four digits. You can't.
That could have been bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe not. Maybe they're looking for, maybe they're alone and they want some company. That's fine. So I don't know. I do like though where these. I think this is where debate night thrives. Is these types of calls.
Here we go.
Coming in. This is what we want. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Who we have calling tonight, and where are you from?
My name is Joe. I'm calling from the Twin Cities in Minnesota.
Very good. What you got for us?
Yeah, so I hope you aren't tired of talking, live versus post-produced. But so I know last week on the podcast you said that you want to get, the Jomez fanboys onto the show. And I suppose I would classify myself in that category.
Okay.
And for me, I just don't see any valid reason why I would watch disc golf live when I can watch it for free and a product that is much higher quality, I think, and on my own time. And I think that's where the majority of people are at that haven't switched.
Can I ask you a question?
For sure.
Okay, so what if everything stays the same? Jomez is still filming. You still have your favorite commentators. But now instead of going to youtube.com/JomezPro to watch it, you go to youtube.com/discgolfprotour.
I think that would be awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what we're basically saying.
Okay. Yeah, I think
if Disc Golf Pro Tour says, hey, we want everything to be under our umbrella, Jomez, we will pay you $25,000 to film and do all our post-production, everything like that, but we're going to post it and monetize it and do everything under our YouTube channel. And Jomez says, yeah, sounds great. We're in. Great.
I think that'd be great. Do you think that is something that could happen? Like,
I don't think it will. I could be wrong. I don't think Jomez would agree to that. And so I think what will end up happening is the Disc Golf Pro Tour will find people that can film, edit, do graphics just as good as Jomez, and then they will put it on and you'll get the same product.
Okay. Well, yeah, I really think there's a long, the Disc Golf Pro Tour has, or the Disc Golf Network has a long way to go just because.
Do you think Central Coast or GK Skins or GK Pro, do you think their coverage is bad?
I think it's solid. It's not, I wouldn't say it's certainly not as good as Jomez.
Do you think if they had the resources Jomez had that it might get better?
Yeah, I would say so. But
so
do you think
the Disc Golf Pro Tour, if Jomez said no, the Disc Golf Pro Tour went to GK and said, hey, we can give you better cameras. We can give you a better graphics person. We can give you blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden GK Pro is making just as good as content. And now it's on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. You would still tune in and watch.
For sure. But
perfect.
I think
I love it.
I think
that's, yeah, that's,
I just,
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I just think there's a lot of changes that need to be made. And I know you talked about them earlier, like as far as the commentary and I, this is me being pretty picky, but I've even noticed the people that are actually filming. I don't think they do as good of a job as, the guys that are filming on Jomez. And I think maybe even the quality of cameras aren't as good as, what Jomez what they're using.
Are you talking Pro Tour? Or are you talking like GK and Central Coast?
No, Pro Tour.
Okay, yeah, because they're doing live, so I think it's a little bit different
that's
situation.
That's the quality, but that he is right about the cameraman straight up skill of following the disc.
Oh, yeah. on the Pro Tour,
like Jomez is, and it might just be they've been doing it for so much longer, but like
it could also be the cameras. The cameras that Jomez are using might be actually easier to follow the disc.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was saying.
You don't think so?
I mean, I can follow a disc on a DSLR zooming with my offhand.
What you're saying then is Disc Golf Pro Tour needs to fire their cameraman.
Not all of them.
No, bad ones.
Yeah, yeah. I think there are some that just maybe they know how to operate a camera and don't know how to follow a disc.
To think that there aren't hundreds of people out there that can film disc golf to me is just wild.
It just takes practice.
Sure.
To learn how to follow a disc and flight characteristics. I think that's why it's easy for someone who knows disc golf to follow a disc golf flight.
Yeah.
Is you can tell when a disc is about to hyzer and when it's about to go straight. Someone who's never seen the sport and picks up a camera is like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done.
Sure. I just think you could teach people to follow. I don't think that's what Joe.
That's not the hardest overlap.
Yeah. I don't think that's what makes Jomez is their camera people.
Correct.
I'll say that.
It's their graphics and
the
motion
commentary,
graphics people.
All that stuff. Yeah. So, okay.
For sure.
But yeah,
real quick, I just
go for it.
I think just the combination of bats with commentary that I think is garbage most of the time, and the fact that I have to pay for something and watch ads, it's got a long, long ways to go before I would, you know, prioritize watching it live.
I'm never trying to convince anyone to watch live. That is, like, if you love post-production, that's fine. I'm not trying to convince people to watch live. What I'm trying to convince people is I think everything should be under the Disc Golf Pro Tour umbrella. That's what I'm trying to convince. So I think we both agreed that if the Disc Golf Pro Tour can create a product that post-production-wise is equally as good or close to equally as good as Jomez and Central Coast and GK, you would tune in and watch under YouTube's under Disc Golf Pro Tour's YouTube channel. That's my point.
Okay.
I'm not trying to get you to watch live. Like, if you don't want to watch live, it is what it is.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, I just think I hear a lot, you know, live is, you know, the future of disc golf, and right now I think that's just tough to
see. I mean, live for sports, people tune in way more for live for sports than anything else. That's why, you know, the advertising for live sports is drastically insane. The amount of money that people throw into live sports is insane. I don't think that's going to go anywhere, especially in the States. People in the States go nuts about live sports. I mean, the fact that they can get over 100,000 people at a NASCAR event or 100,000 people at football games, I mean, that's nuts that people are going to show up to watch a live sport like that. And then obviously a lot more people watching on TV. I don't think that's ever going to change. I don't think you're going to see a switch into people being like, oh, I don't care about this, I'll just tune in and watch it 2 days from now. But that's not to say people aren't out there that do enjoy sitting down and watching at their own time. I'm not trying to convince them otherwise.
Okay. That's fair. Yep. That's good to know. I agree with that.
Sweet. Well, hey, I appreciate you calling in. You heard
yeah.
my call last episode and you called in. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I love the podcast. I look forward to it every week. So
hey, appreciate that, man. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for calling.
Yep. Have a good one.
Have a good one. Hey.
Before we talk before we take another call, I don't know if we're going to take another call, but.
Oh, we're taking another call.
There's a lot of people who don't understand or want to know your reasoning behind why bring it all onto the Pro Tour channel. Like, basically, if it's the same product and you're just taking it from Jomez and you're putting the Pro Tour branding on it, what does that do? What's the reasoning behind that?
Because it builds the Disc Golf Pro Tour brand.
That's it? Just building the brand?
I mean, that I can give you other reasons, but that's the biggest.
To me, the one I always thought was the monetization factor behind it.
For sure, that's one too. But, I mean, if the Disc Golf Pro Tour is trying to become more popular, right, they should be trying to build up their social media. They should be trying to build up their name recognition. And right now, there's a lot of people that don't really know what the Disc Golf Pro Tour is, but know what Jomez is.
See,
and
to me,
Jomez covers the Disc Golf Pro Tour, where it's like you wouldn't have people that if CBS only covered football, you wouldn't have. I'm not going to do that analogy, but you see what I'm saying? Like, if I'm a company and I own a product that people want to see, I'm going to do everything I can to like try to build up that product. And I don't know if I could be wrong here. I could be wrong. I don't believe the Disc Golf Pro Tour giving it to another YouTube channel. It'd be different if it was nationally broadcast, right? So if like a ESPN, CBS, Fox, something like that came in and said, hey, we want to show the Disc Golf Pro Tour, it's on YouTube. So they're giving it, they could post it on their YouTube channel. They're deciding not to. They're posting it on another YouTube channel. My guess is if they didn't do that and they posted it on theirs, it would still get as many views.
Yeah.
That would be my guess.
I will say one thing that can't be overlooked is I don't know if the Pro Tour currently has the resources or would be willing to spend the resources to hire the level of talent that Jomez has when it comes to graphics and motion graphics guys. Because I've talked to those guys, and a lot of them are doing this purely because they love disc golf. Mm. and their day jobs that they their day jobs that they quit. I mean, there's some of them that were freelancing for Amazon, Netflix. They probably I didn't talk numbers with them, but as a creative beforehand, I know if you're doing freelance work for Amazon or Netflix, you're not living paycheck to paycheck. Yeah. You're doing just fine. And so they're taking, one of them was like, everyone on earth, my parents, everyone thinks I'm an idiot for, you know, quitting everything to work with Jomez, but I just love it. So if the Pro Tour is hiring, those specific guys are loyal to Jomez.
I wonder if
they're not going to the Pro Tour if it means Jomez can't do coverage. So to find guys of that talent level elsewhere, I don't know that the Pro Tour has that kind of money right now.
I wonder if they crank the numbers and see, okay, if we are able to hit 250,000 views per round, per like video that puts out, how much money are we making off that?
Yeah.
I wonder if they crank the numbers to be like, okay, every tournament we do, we're going to have lead, second card, and then yada, 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 and we're going to make $25,000. And 20,000 of that is going to go out that week and pay for all the people, and we take in five.
Yeah.
And that slowly, that five, that they're not going to be paying more. So slowly that five becomes seven, and that seven becomes 10.
I still, 20. Personally, who knows? Guy might have been even been calling, thinking he's talking to you, talking to me. Because I personally.
Talking to you, talking to me.
Like, I think he was calling, expecting you to debate him when, like, the stuff that you agree with him on is probably where.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Not necessarily that I think people should watch, like post-produce should disappear, people shouldn't watch it, but I do think we need to encourage and push more people to be watching live, because what live does good, the biggest reason I think a lot of people don't watch live isn't because they're like don't watch other sports or they don't whatever to where they like don't understand what live sports as a whole is good. It's just that the quality barriers
is a better product.
Yeah, it's a much better product, post is. Some people, I've seen plenty of people be like, if live lived up to the quality of post, I would watch it because they would rather watch the moment happen. Mm-hmm. I think that if live could get the quality there and more people were pushed to live first and post was like the NFL network that he brought up, or the previous caller had 5 million views on that one thing, I guarantee that Cowboys game in primetime had who knows how many people watched it. Had to be more than 5 million
probably
views. So, yeah, a lot of people watch that, but we're looking at a whole different level of numbers to where more people are watching live.
Yeah, because you're trying to make it to where it's not as convenient to watch post. Because right now you can watch post like the next
not
day.
Not yet. Not right now. Once live gets the quality there.
Yeah.
Sure. Because I think
it's tough. The product's not there yet. Yeah.
I think that's a big shift because it allows, I think it'll be big for disc golf because it allows a lot of like social media, stuff like that to take that next step to the better, higher level. Because like if we do a post round wrap up show after live, for instance, the people who watch post aren't going to tune into that show yet.
Probably
so there's
not.
there's a lot of stuff that like the Pro Tour, even if the Pro Tour did a post round recap show on their network, they're missing out on monetization opportunities that are benefiting the Pro Tour because people are waiting till the next day to watch post. Whereas and that's not even including the amount that you can monetize with sponsorship spots and stuff like that on the actual course, and all there's a lot more monetization opportunities I feel like in live and stuff surrounding the live event than there is, because post, like the world's round from a few years ago or like 2015 USDGC, that might have millions of views by now, but like I know me personally, I've watched some of those things 45 times in the last 3 years when the event happened 6 years ago.
Yeah, you get YouTube, the numbers are inflated. Like if I'm watching a Jomez round one and two holes in, I have to go do something and I close out of the app and then I come back and I start it again. That's another view.
Yeah.
So like I could potentially have 5 or 6 views. The unique views on those videos, it'd be very interesting to me to see how many unique views those videos are, because that kind of gives you an idea potentially of like how many people actually care about pro disc golf. But I say if we have another caller, I say we do one more.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm
let's do it. Hello, hello.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah. How's it going?
Good, how are you guys?
We're doing good. Who are we talking to? Where are you from?
This is Dallas from Michigan.
Dallas from Michigan. What's going on, man?
Well, I was going to kind of jump on that wagon with the footage there and how they're doing it between post-production and the live. One thing I think they're making a big mistake on is allowing different companies to own the footage they take. Because talking about post-production, post-production should have captured the whole thing, not just the lead card, especially when someone's making the push for the second card. That is something that they completely miss out on. They've teamed up with GK Pro recently. I forget which tournament it was, where they're actually showing a second card pushing up, and that agreement was in place beforehand. But that's a big thing, especially, you know, if someone's watching post-produced, what's not helping them is having two different companies filming the same card from nearly the same angles, like eight different cameras on the same card. If they could spread that out a little bit more, get some third card, then your post-produced could have a little bit more narrative. It could tell the story of how things are developing between the different cards, capture more quality shots. And for the guys that like post-production, you can watch the entire round. You could also have highlights that are not just limited to, you know, if Joe missed one, do highlights, all they have is the one card. They can do the best to whoever that day out of the four. But if it was spread out, maybe get 16 guys recorded, you're going to get more close shots. You're going to get more, you know, great runs. You have a 8-10 minute round summary where you show some great shots and you show some cool stuff that happened throughout the round.
Yeah. Good points.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that live versus post-produced needs to be treated as two products because there's a lot of stuff you can do with live that you just can't do with post-produced.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It is. It's tough to see eight cameras on lead card sometimes.
At the same time, it kind of it isn't. They're not there yet to actually break off and say, okay, we're not only going to have all the footage, but what we're also going to do is be in charge of all the highlights. You still need that that push, that creative push. Like when Jomez makes these pushes, and they're guys like you're saying, the guys that are practically doing it freelance, that's all going on their resume. These guys are going to make a fortune after this, whether it be in disc golf or wherever they go. Like it's a great career move for them because they actually have showable product that they can work with. That's helping them get those Amazon deals. But they're also pushing the technology forward in disc golf. Like the quality that's gone up over the past couple of years, if you go back and watch like you're, what you're saying, that 2015, the difference in the user experience that they're presenting is above and beyond. And I think that's also, that would go into Brody, your take about wanting to push towards mainstream TV, you know, CBS, ESPN, that's always something I've been kind of against. They already had that audience. They have the people that are hungry to watch golf, and then they go there. Audiences are following right now. They're not being let into. Can't lead in with a football game and have disc golf after because people are DVRing it, and they're turning the channel, and they have Netflix. It's a different market, and I think if we keep pushing the technology, we foster a lot of competitive and innovative styles. I think what disc golf could present, if they embrace technology and how we can use that to show a sport in a whole different way, it could be better than what they're currently doing. They're stuck. The cameras get better. The robotic football players with the end zone dances get better. But the product is the same. They're stagnant.
Yeah.
Disc golf has an opportunity to jump ahead and do something unique and cool, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Sweet.
Appreciate you calling.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Good talking to you guys. Yeah. Take care. Appreciate it.
We'll do one more call, one more quick call if we got one. We got a couple people in the chat.
Live versus post-produce.
Yeah. If it's live versus post-produce, we're cutting
you. Might get hung up on. Just FYI.
Silas is a killer. Is ruthless. He is a killer. He will hang up on you. I'm doing this.
We started here.
Is that? What movie is that? That's all right, here we go. What movie is this? Hello, who are we talking to?
5-1.
Oh. What is this? When they're like,
I don't know.
He's the king and he's up there and like if he goes like this, that means kill him.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, what movie is that? The king was like a weasel. He's like a weaselly guy.
I don't even know what you're talking about anymore. I've seen
Gladiator. Gladiator. I'm the king and Gladiator. Silas, if I give you the thumbs down immediately. Was it Caesar? Is that actually Caesar in Gladiator?
It has to be.
I don't think that. I don't think he was Caesar.
He's probably playing Caesar.
I don't think he was playing Caesar.
Well, it wasn't a real Caesar.
No, I mean, no. But I'm saying in the movie, I don't think he was playing Caesar.
Julius Caesar.
Nah, no. Joquan? Was it Joquan? Is that even how you pronounce his name?
300? Definitely not 300. But that was a fantastic movie. Don't get me started with movies.
Yeah.
I swear it was a Troy. It might be in a lot of just Dark Horse, like Rome old movies.
There is a lot. I don't watch movies.
Joaquin.
He became Caesar.
Is it Joaquin? Joaquin Phoenix?
That's the actor.
Yeah, how do you say his name? Joaquin? Joaquin?
I don't know.
Phoenix? Joaquin.
Joaquin.
That doesn't sound right.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin. I think it's Joaquin.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin.
He played the Joker in Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also, wasn't that the guy that did...
We have a caller?
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, who are we talking to and where are you from?
It's going good. This is Tim. I'm from San Diego.
All right, Tim, what you got for us?
I wanted to touch base on live coverage, not to do with live versus produced. But
it's not to do with live versus produced.
Specifically commentary.
I'm down.
Live commentary.
Okay, all right. All right, we'll let it slide. Okay, what you got?
All right. So I was noticing over the match play weekend that something felt a little forced. There were three people in the booth, and what seemed odd to me was, no offense to Christine Jennings, I love what she's been doing. I've been following her on social media for a few years. She's great at what she does.
Give it to me hard. You don't need to sugarcoat it. Give it to me hard,
it seems like they threw her in there just to have a female perspective when it probably would have worked better if they had just her and Terry together in the booth. Cause they didn't, it felt like they weren't letting her talk a lot. Mm. And when they were, it was mostly when the FPO coverage was happening. And I thought out of the three of them, she probably delivered some of the best commentary, but it seemed strange to me. So I was wondering, do you guys think that there should be, women covering FPO and men covering MPO, or should it be a mixed bag? In my opinion, I think it should be a mixed bag, but it seems like the Pro Tour is trying to split it up a little bit.
I like it. The first thing I'll say is the three-person situation needs to get figured out, because if you guys are watching right now...
What are you doing?
When they're doing live and they've got three people in the booth, like the guy in the middle... is like sitting like up here
in front and trying to
talk
to
me. And the two people are sitting like behind. So he's like, yeah, what happened? It's when they cut to it, man, it's hard to watch.
It's strange. It feels like it wasn't set up properly.
This is what I'll say. I think having two people in the booth and trying to work out that chemistry is very tough. Having three people without having that two person chemistry down is a train wreck waiting to happen.
Well, I think the hardest part is, and I think this is kind of to his point, is right now they have, it's been Valerie Jenkins, Elaine King, Juliana Corver, Christine Jennings, Hannah Macbeth, that are they're there to commentate the FPO. Mm-hmm. They'll every once in a while chirp in on the open, the MPO, Mixed Pro Open Division, but they're there to commentate on the FPO, which I think breaks up the flow that you don't have. Like, if you want to have a combined stream, that's fine. Have just the two best commentators. That might be a Hannah and Christine combination. That might be a Hannah and Terry combination. That might be a Terry. It's probably not Terry and Nate, but it might.
Absolutely.
But there's combinations that, like, you find the combination chemistry wise that works.
Mm-hmm.
And like disc golf, if you know the sport, you know the sport. You might not know the storylines, but that's your job as a commentator to learn. And let them just commentate the whole stream, or split the streams and have two separate commentary teams. But I agree with them that it can be confusing when, like, me and you are commentating MPO, and then, like, I'm the play-by-play guy. I'm like, all right, now let's turn to FPO, and we just ignore you completely. And
everyone
we're like,
just shuts off.
And now there's a whole new commentator that we're trying to, like,
yeah.
That just breaks up the flow.
I think, so to answer, on my side, to answer your question, I don't care if who's in the booth as long as they know what they're talking about. I think it's going to be very difficult to have someone that knows MPO and FPO. I think that's going to be really tricky for them to pay attention to both. I think the ideal situation is where they either have two separate streams going on, or they do it to where one stream is in the morning and one stream's in the afternoon, and they have like two different broadcasting teams. because
yeah.
I think trying to do it all at once, I believe Hunter and you are correct in the sense of where it is just like out of control.
I just think that adds to breaking up the flow.
100%.
Yeah. 100%. It makes the jump feel even more
and
jarring.
It's weird too. It's like I'm sitting here, but I have nothing and I don't know anything to say about FPO, so I'm out.
And then he just like,
but that's not true. You might not know something about the story, but you know how you should attack a shot, which is something that like the commentary is missing. You know, they often talk about the pressure or the odd situation they might be in, but they never talk about how, you know, they're throwing a putter approach shot from 150 feet out. If they wanted to land it softly, they should probably throw it nose up. Or something along those lines. You know, they don't get enough into the detail.
You're right, for sure.
I think that a good color commentator who like can do what you were just saying of get into the nitty gritty detail, it shouldn't be like a really hard thing to be like, hey, you need to learn the storylines of these leaders, like the two guys in MPO and the two women in FPO. You need to learn their storylines so you can cover, like, that's a much easier job than trying to get someone to learn the ins and outs of disc golf, but like they know the storylines, if that makes sense. To where like
the disc golf pro tour could be providing a lot of that information to their commentators. You know, one thing that I'm noticing is I know that one of the conversations that's come up a lot in the past, the live coverage is dead space. And trying to find something to talk about or put graphics up on the screen. And part of that narrative, when you're paying attention to, you know, who's on the lead card or who's, you know, leading the event, they can already have a lot of that stuff teed up. So that way the commentators, you could have one that's very technical oriented and another one who's very story oriented and working with the pro tour and, you know, getting things phoned into their ear with more information. I guess I was kind of saying all that to lead into a hot take of what are your opinions on bringing in someone who has more sports commentating background to work in tandem with someone who's a disc golf expert?
I think that would be, if they're not trying to do that in the off season, if they're not trying to find someone in the off season like that and, you know, try to coach them up a little bit, right? Get them, maybe have a couple events to have them go out and watch so they kind of see what it looks like. Have them watch other broadcasts and get them kind of familiarized with disc golf a little bit. I think they're missing out because I think that could really be the glue that a lot of people right now, when they're talking about, man, the commentary. So no one in the booth right now has that experience, like has the experience of like they went to school for it. They know the do's and don'ts of broadcasting and all that. Like, everyone's just kind of trying to figure out the best they can. And so, you know, sometimes they do get a little bit of an unfair shake of like people attacking them. But again, at the end of the day, people don't really want to hear your reasons for why you can't do anything. So I don't know. I think that's definitely the move. So
sure. Well, I definitely agree with that. That last statement that you said about how they, you know, they're trying to work with, you know, what's available.
We might have lost the call.
All right.
Golf for a long time. He's been doing his own commentary, and he can kind of keep an unbiased perspective. I feel like he did a good job with that this weekend at the match play tournament. But what's odd to me is trying to kind of force in a professional golfer, to be honest. Like, I think Nate Doss does a good job with commentary, but it can be very off-putting sometimes the way that he might ignore or reject something that, you know, the other commentator might say.
Yeah.
I feel like having that bias removed would help significantly.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was Trevor. Me and Trevor were talking about this when you were off doing your, you know what? I don't actually know what you were doing. I think you went to go get the meeting.
I had a meeting.
But me and Trevor were talking about how if you look at a lot of commentary teams that have twosomes, like there's two people in the booth, one is the guy that is just kind of flowing and putting it together, and then the other one is like the expert. And you never hear, like, if you're the expert and I'm the guy that's just supposed to flow, if you said something, you never hear the expert go, well, actually, I don't believe you're right.
Yeah.
Like you never hear the commentators. Mm-hmm. Now, before the event starts and after the event starts, that's when you have multiple analysts, and that's when you kind of get a debate of like what happened, what went down. But during the broadcast,
yeah, that's when you get Stephen A. Smith and Joe Rogan going at it.
During the broadcast, you normally don't ever hear commentators like go back and forth with, you know, what actually is happening. So, but hey,
yeah,
we appreciate the call. That's a good way, I think, to finish out the calls for this week. Heck yeah! Thank you so much for calling in, man. Hope you have a wonderful night.
Hey, thanks, you too.
Yeah,
it's definitely an interesting thing.
I think someone actually said Joe Rogan does it a lot in UFC. He does do it sometimes, and I think it's when the play by play guy, who is like the flow guy, will say something and it won't be right, so Joe Rogan corrects him, say actually no, that is a blah blah blah.
Whole different thing. I'm the play-by-play guy and I say
something incorrect
and you as the expert correct me, that works a lot more than if you're the expert and I'm like, I don't know
Charlie, don't seem right.
Are you sure? Yeah, but I definitely think that, like, I've said it multiple times, I'm sure I've said it on podcasts, I know I've said it to people in person, is like, disc golf right now, the Pro Tour, the Disc Golf Network has a chance to hire someone as the voice of disc golf, the play-by-play guy. And then just find the former pro that works the best with him as the color commentator guy, to where the play-by-play guy just needs to understand the sport enough to use the right terminology, keep the thing flowing, but don't understand the cadence, their timing, which I just said the same thing twice. They'll understand all the flow stuff, and they probably went to school for it or had some experience in it. Understand the flow of the broadcast and when to go to the color commentator guy, or what prompts to give them to get the best out of them, versus it just being me and you, and we're both like, you know, just disc golfers, and we're like, hey, I'll be the play-by-play guy, you be the color commentary guy, and then it just turns into a conversation.
Yeah, hopefully we can figure it out.
It works.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
All right. We will try to, in the future, I think, try to get the calls quicker. I don't know how we can do that. Like, am I going to have to be Julius Caesar? I might have to be Julius Caesar, and at a certain point, like, if someone's just kind of like going, I might have.
We could put timers.
I think I just have to.
Just
no, because there might be someone that's really giving it to me, and pause, and I'm going to like want to combat that and keep it going.
Yeah.
But if there is a situation where it's just like I almost am falling asleep, I might just have to Julius Caesar. I like that. Okay. I think people,
if you like that, if you like it, then we.
I think people in the chat, honestly, tonight,
it would be good. I think it would be good to maybe present a list of topics. Like, if we would have had your takes and been like, if you want to call, I want you to bring up one of these takes. Like, we're talking about Brody's worst takes on Twitter.
Are you saying we should do that prior to the episode? Or are you saying...
No, like during the episode, let's call, you know what? Call in if you have any disagreements. Like, we're going to be kind of discussing why we think this way. But if you're against it, call in now.
I feel like that's what every episode is. We have topics. And if you disagree with any of the topics...
I just don't
want
to keep going back to live versus post-produced.
I'm Julius Caesaring people.
Okay, if you
come
Caesar,
on live... I think live versus post-produce is dead.
Yeah, it's been answered.
I think literally this episode, I will say, what is better? I think the title of this episode would be, what is better, live or post-produced disc golf?
That's not getting clicks. We've done that so many times.
You don't think so?
I think we keep it Brody's worst takes.
Okay, well, maybe we keep it that way. But maybe in the description I say that, so that way if you want
to
hear...
You can send people to it.
If you want to hear our takes on live versus post, you come here, and then we squash it. And if something weird happens in the future, let's bring it back up. But let's move the needle a little bit. I think it needed to be said tonight. Obviously, a lot of people are super confused about what – I mean, people were thinking that you wanted to, like, literally just banish any post-production, which you might actually still want to do that.
No, I want to drive traffic to live, but I don't want to banish post-produce. I think
you just want to – okay.
I think post-produce is a different product, and it has its spot in the disc golf world as a different product. Live – biggest thing with live is the quality's got to – kick it up a notch if it wants to be what it should be.
But I think we're going to go, I think we want to go more, or at least me, I want to try to get more topics too, especially in the like player category, because I think that's really interesting to talk about. So like,
I think
is this person better than anyone?
Now that we like know Prize Picks,
I think Prize Picks has a lot of potential.
There's a lot of stuff that like there's a lot of debates that can happen within those picks.
Like, what if Nico calls in and goes, Brody, you're an absolute idiot for picking the over?
I'll
like,
tell you
that
this,
would be
incredible. I was this close to taking Big Germ under.
I looked at it. He was the highest, I think, at 50.
He was like 52.5.
Was it 52.5? I love the .5s, too. So I looked at it. I thought about it.
I was this close to taking the Big Germ under because he's got that touchy forehand.
I know he does.
And then I almost slid him into my freaky pick, but Emerson Keith had to take that.
I really did want the guy that said that my worst take was me saying that I was good at disc golf to call in, because I'm really curious what he thinks the level of good in disc golf is.
People like that will never call in.
I don't think so. Well, you never know. And I'm also not like – I'm also highly against this – notion of, because I see it all the time, and I do appreciate people on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram backing me up. I love that. I appreciate your guys' support. But I don't like the argument of like, he's better than you. I never like that argument of, because someone is better than you, their opinion matters more, or your opinion doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. I hate that argument. But
that was my Twitter bio for a while. My rating's not high enough for my opinions to matter.
Yeah.
That was my Twitter bio.
So I don't like that being like, if someone says something to me, I don't like that. Now, if they say like, I'm trash, I can beat you, then of course I'm going to say like, hey, let's play.
Bogey Rose battle.
Let's play.
If they say blonde dude blows, we got to come to their town.
Yeah. I'm down for that. But I'm a lot of times I'm just really interested in what some of these people really think.
Yeah.
Because I don't, maybe there are only 20 good players in disc golf.
No. There's 20 great players.
Okay. There's a lot of good players, though.
A lot of good players. Like I said, I would consider myself a good disc golf player.
Well, if you're good, then what the heck does that make me? Jeez, I'm feeling pretty
decent at best. All right, thank you so much for tuning in. Hopefully you enjoyed this week's
about myself.
Hopefully you enjoyed this week's debate night. If you're curious about the Twitter thread with New London handicap, stuff like that, just a fair reminder, 16-2. If you think that was a loss to me,
no.
I don't know how.
No. Don't make me go into 30 more minutes on this. We have to go home and
no,
sleep.
I'm wrapping the show up. I was just
Bogey
saying
Bro Banner,
16-2.
If you're interested, Bogey Bro Banner will have the video. When is that video coming out? This week?
It's not Bogey Bro Banner. It's just our Patreon.
Oh, sorry.
I'll post it tomorrow. I got it queued
up. Okay. The video will come out to our Patreons. If you're interested, check out the Patreon. Really awesome. Also, shout out to Prize Picks. Appreciate you guys supporting this podcast. Definitely check that out. I think it's gonna be really fun, especially when you get your friends and stuff involved.
Yeah.
So check that out. I think I went 3-0. I think all my players are gonna hit.
Then
it's kind of
unfortunate. Did you go power play or did you go flex pick?
I went flex.
So then you don't really think all three is
gonna hit. I want to get points. I think Trevor's idea of going power play is just absolutely ludicrous.
If you're that confident, you go power play.
No, because I want points. I want points.
All right, well, regardless, thanks so much for tuning in. Hopefully you had a great week.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track. We care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.